Smith Show starts now.
Welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks for being here. Tonight on the big program, going to be talking about putting workers on corporate boards. Oh, say it isn't so. The people who actually create the wealth, the people who actually do the work, having some say? Oh, wow, can't have that. That would be the perfect scenario for me. You look at what goes on in Germany. Much higher standard of living, much higher wages. Oh, but by the way, much more union density. And oh, by the way, workers on corporate boards. And oh, by the way, not as big a gulf between the billionaire class and everyone else. Gee, I wonder if there's something to that. Also going to talk about our trade deficit and the jobs picture, the higher ed screw job that's going on here in Pennsylvania, minimum wage workers and their CEO overlords, and so much more. Your thoughts, your questions, comments, whatever's on your mind, you can give us a call, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. You can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. So, I spent today pretty much all day fielding calls from my right-wing loony friends, of which I have several, who basically in unison, one right after the other, I'm sure yesterday it was a collective thought, oh, we've got to call Rick and bust his chops. Because what they all thought is, we won! And what's amazing to me is not one of them beyond the platitude of, well, now I have the right to work. Beyond that, could not explain what had gone on in Michigan. And I find that really, really sad. The critical thinking component that goes into pursuing this, and this is why they did what they did in Michigan in the way that they did it. This is why they rammed it through on a Thursday in about 8 hours. They announced it at 11 o'clock in the morning, and by 7:45 that night, it was a done deal. Because once you start really talking about and understanding what they've done, they're going to cause irreparable harm to working people, not only in the state of Michigan, but across the Midwest for at least a generation. And for no other reason than political payback, for no other reason than to be able to throw up their hands and say, we won, without knowing what it is they won. And you know, I had the same conversation several times with a, we beat your behind there in Michigan. And I go, well, I wasn't there. I wasn't fighting, but thank you for that. And then going into, well, now we have the freedom. I go, you have the freedom to do what? Explain to me exactly what freedom you now have. You have the freedom to be divided. You have the free, because this is what's going to do. It's going to divide the workforce. It's going to pit people against each other, which is what the Kochs and the DeVosses and the wealth class of this country want. They want division on the shop floor. They want people at each other's throats. And that's, this is going to do that. And maybe we need a good generation of doing this. Maybe we need to go back to the, maybe this is a good thing in disguise. But it's going to cause division. It's going to make sure that wages stagnate and then lower. And not only is it going to pull the wages down in Michigan, it's going to pull the wages down in Ohio and in Illinois and in Wisconsin. So we're all losing. We're all falling backward. And then, you know, then comes with it the less health care, less ability to get a pension, worse safety and worse conditions. And maybe it has to go back to that. Maybe it has to go back to the days when things were so horrible And I listened yesterday as Rick Snyder gave his history of labor and kept throwing out this this wonderful term, a value proposition. Like they're trying to make being a member of a union like buying car insurance. It's a commodity. And we're gonna weigh whether it's gonna be a good return on my investment. A very Wall Street way of thinking about being part of a movement that's going to make everybody's lives collectively better. You think about every bit of social progress that's gone on in this country. It's been because the labor movement has been behind it. Collectively, workers standing together saying, you know what? We don't want kids dying in mines. And what did you hear during the presidential election, during the primary? Newt Gingrich said, well, get them in there and clean those bathrooms. Put them to work. Put those union janitors out of work and get those kids in there doing that work. We're slowly moving back. We're seeing the erosion of the minimum wage. We're seeing the destruction, the evisceration of actual hour laws. And the abuse of independent contractors, the abuse of these 1099 contractors. But that's where they want to go. So they use these divisive things. And they got people like my friends saying, hey, we won! With, again, without telling me what they want. I said, well, what right do I have? A right? Do I have a right to work? I mean, is there really a right in there for me to be able to get a job? Is there a job there? Well, no. So what did I win? Well, I don't have to pay dues. You didn't anyway. You didn't have to pay. The law is you don't have to join a union if you don't want to. If a union comes into your workplace, you do not have to be a member. That's the current law. It's been that way since the Beck decisions. But you do have to pay for what it costs to administer and negotiate the contract. So what this is this is a freeloader bill. This is saying, well, I don't have to pay for something that I'm getting. Because understand, the union still has to represent the deadbeats. And what the wealth class understands is if we can keep that division going, we can keep those people at each other's throats. One guy going, hey, you know, I'm paying for this contract to be enforced and negotiated. And this guy over here, he's getting something for nothing. Now you've got division. And you've got a weaker body. So when I look at this, I go, you know, we need to have that conversation on exactly what the right is doing. Because I love that argument. A value proposition. It's going to make unions go and present a better product. Like being part of a movement is like buying dish soap. You know, it's like buying a mop. Same thing. It's not. Being for me anyway, and I go back to when I was a kid. You know, I looked at unions in this light. That once you get a job where you have a contract where there's the ability to move out of poverty, of which where I was, that's where I wanted to be. When I saw the Teamsters logo, when I saw the IBEW logo, when I saw all these different union symbols, I go, that's the path to the middle class. What the wealth class has done for the last 50 years is they've demonized those symbols. They've demonized those people, called them stupid and lazy. And it blows my mind that working people look at them and go, I heard. And I can't tell you how many I heard arguments I heard today. Oh, I heard that, you know, this. You're wrong. This is all about handcuffing what labor is able to do. This is all about handcuffing the ability to bring people together. And they put it in such flowery terms. Oh, we're in favor of you. Oh, we're in favor of them. In fact, we're in favor of not numerous ones being in the same place. Because they understand. They know how to keep us separated. They know how to keep us at each other's throats. It's amazing to me. But they get away with it. Time and time and time again. So the hope is in going forward. That the conversation is now being had because now Michigan's got to, they've got to rise up. The working people in that state have got to, they've got to go take it to court. They've got to get it on the ballot. They've got to figure out how to get this thing overturned. And if that means throwing all the bums out, that means throwing all the bums out. And that's what has to happen. There has to be a bloodbath at the ballot box. Now, one of the guys on the floor yesterday in Michigan said, well, you know, there's going to be blood in the streets. And the right just picked us. Hey, they want violence. That's not at all what he's talking about. Look, there's the people who voted for this. They should be ousted. There should be hell to pay for them. But you know what the sad part of this is? The way I see it, the people who voted for this, the wealth class will take care of. Because we have given them so much. And it comes back down to you and me. It comes back down to the average voter being... And I had this conversation with my hygienist, who is also... Well, he's actually coming around. You know, we've had these conversations for years. And while he was, you know, a Tea Party guy, and then I'm kind of more libertarian. And then the more you talk about things, he goes, well, you know, I actually have some liberal ideas, don't I? And the answer is, yeah, you actually do. Because you believe in public education. You believe in investment in infrastructure. You believe in, oh, we should have cops and firefighters and public teachers and the military. We should all have those things. And decent air and water and all that. Fairly liberal ideas. But then you get down to the divisiveness. Wow, that lazy person. And you go, well, you know, we should be making people work. I'm in favor of it. I've always been a supporter of government as the employer of last resort. Everyone should have something productive to do. But this, what they've passed, what they've rammed through like thieves in the night, this is not going to create any jobs. This is not going to help any working people, but it is going to give more power, more control, and more domination to the top. And I go back to, you know, these billionaires, they don't spend money without seeing the investment. They don't take a dime out of their pocket unless they know that they can double or triple or quadruple it. And what they've done in Michigan is as I've heard, this was the biggest Christmas present you could give to the wealth class. This was it. And you and I, well, we got coal in our stockings. Going to take a quick break. When we come back, going to talk with Pennsylvania State Representative Pat Harkins about his thoughts on this and also the announcement by Governor Corbett today. Quick break. Right back after this.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham.
Shame on you! Shame on you! Shame on you!
Angry protesting Michigan workers confronting police on Tuesday at Michigan State Capitol. Thousands of people gathered at Michigan State Capitol to protest final passage of the anti-union legislation known as Right to Work. Police pepper sprayed at least one person and at least two pro-union protesters were arrested. About 12,000 people turned out to protest the attack on unions. The anti-union Tea Party group Americans for Prosperity erected a tent on the Capitol lawn, but it was torn down by protesters. This is what it sounded like as that tent came down. The so-called Right to Work law will be signed by Michigan Governor Rick Snyder very soon as the Republican-controlled government in Michigan rushes it through the lame duck session. This is the latest Republican Party attack on the organized power and rights of working people. Unions in Michigan, including the United Auto Workers, are vowing a protracted and powerful fight back against the politicians responsible for this anti-union attack.
Right to work!
In more than 100 events coast to coast this week, working families called on their congressional representatives to reject cuts for Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid, and to stop tax giveaways to the rich. The AFL-CIO says in a variety of ways, people sent the message to Congress to make the people's will crystal clear. From candlelight vigils to caroling to petition signatures and rallies, politicians were told to keep their hands off earned benefit programs. that are vital to working people. Poll after poll demonstrates strong majorities of Americans want no cuts to Social Security and Medicare, while they do want the rich to be taxed more. Polls also show people blame Republicans more than Democrats or President Obama for the so-called fiscal cliff standoff. A Connecticut conference about attacks on civil liberties in the U.S. is leading to formation of a civil liberties solidarity network. Melinda Tuhus reports.
The conference theme was, an injury to one is an injury to all, which harkened back to a 19th century labor slogan. John Woodruff, Jr., the Northeast International Rep for the United Electrical Workers Union, spoke on the morning panel that also featured representatives of an immigrants' rights group, Muslim Americans, a prison abolition group, and the American Civil Liberties Union.
The broader history of the labor movement, labor history in this country, has gone hand in hand with violent attacks on our civil liberties from our founding. Our union, the UE, was one of the first national unions to come out and say that you have rights, not only in this country, but in the union.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Texas is a right-to-work state. Texas is a great state. We could be the Texas of the Northeast.
They're selling make-believe, and we don't buy that here. 'Cause in the real world, they're shutting Detroit down. While the boss man takes his bonus pay, jets on out of town. D.C.'s bailing out the bankers as a farmer's auction. While they're living it up on Wall Street in that New York City town, here in the real world, they're shutting Detroit down.
And while they're in the process screwing the working people of the state of Michigan, I got to tell you, I am just absolutely furious about what happened yesterday and what last Thursday. It's just mind-blowing. But look, you know, the reason we talk about what happened in Wisconsin, the Ohio, Indiana, Michigan, it's coming here. Trust me. All of the right-wing nonsense, it's all right under the surface. It's all here. And I look at what happened today. The governor came out and he said, well, you know, we're not going to take that Medicaid money. We're not going to set up the exchange, not doing it. And what I found interesting is I got an email from the Koch front group, Americans for Prosperity, at 111 that said, oh, we think the governor is going to turn his back on this. 130, the governor comes out with his statement saying, yeah, we're gonna turn it down. And at 135, American for Prosperity says, well, the governor said so. Kind of wonder, you know, who's running the government. And I like what Representative Mike Sterla tweeted today. Perhaps Americans for Prosperity, he wrote, will be presenting Governor Corbett's transportation plan in January as well. And, you know, you gotta wonder who's running things. Are the Koch brothers running things here in Pennsylvania? You look at our education situation, the DeVos family's got a lot of money in this state, which is why I've asked Pennsylvania State Representative Pat Harkins to come talk to us. Pat, thanks for taking time for me.
Good evening, Rick. How are you?
I am not good. I'm angry. I spent all day today with my right-wing lunatic friends arguing about what happened in Michigan and arguing that they think it would be a great thing to happen here in Pennsylvania.
I just look at this and I don't get upset about it. It just gives me more drive to take on the good fight and keep these people going. I told a neighbor today, you can't turn your back on them. It's just something that, you know, after the election, people feel good and, hey, our guy won. But now is when we get down to governing. And this is where we get into the nuts and bolts. And I'll gladly take this fight on.
Yeah. You know, as a legislator, as someone who, you know, it's your job every day to go in there and fight these battles. What, honestly, the issue aside, the no rights at work agenda aside, the process that went on in Michigan, I've got a real problem with how they, at 11 o'clock in the morning, said, we're going to put it through. By 7:45, they rammed it through, and it was done. There was no question. There was no public input, no debate, nothing. You want to talk about getting something rammed down your throat? Here it is.
And it shows you how quickly things can be accomplished when they want to. I think back to the budget stalemate that we had years ago. When Rendell was in, that was the Democrats, that was the Republicans holding out for some of the crap that they're pulling now on it.
So, in looking at this, I mean, you know, because Governor Corbett came out and said, well, you know, there's no political will here. I'm of the mindset when I heard him say that, you get the DeVos's and the Cokes and these billionaires to come in and throw a bunch of money in here. I'll bet you it's on the table once they finish privatizing the lottery and once they finish pushing the rest of their, ripping off the pensions and screwing up the school system. I'll bet you it's on the table as well.
Well, we do have some sensible Republicans. And they're fading away quickly with the teabaggers coming on board. But I do hold out hope that a lot of these people like Tom Mert, who was a card-carrying union plumber, will stand up to these people and say, hey, you know, this isn't the way to go. You disregard history. You disregard what people fought and gave their lives for. These younger generations coming up, coupled with these people with the money, don't understand the principles and how we got the right to have a good work atmosphere, safe working conditions, good pay, sick days, personal days. The concept's there, and the young people don't understand that it was a tough fight to get these things for people.
Now, I'm glad you brought that up because, you know, yesterday I listened to Rick Scott, the governor there, and the Republican governor there in Michigan, and the history that he laid out was just like an insurance plan. You know, people bought it because it was and the word he kept using, the phrase, a value proposition. Like, you know, it's an investment and you're going to get a big return on it, so you're going to have to decide whether it's a good investment or not. And I'm going, well, wait a second. It's being part of a social movement. It's being part of something that makes everybody's lives better. Or just do I see it differently than most people?
Well, if you don't have a workforce that's making the money, and I think of the auto industry with this, if you don't have a worker being paid the right amount of money, they don't sustain the 1% who owns and controls everything. So they forget about that part. And also, I even think of like a local car dealer who I know who would like his employees to drive the vehicles that they service. And the one guy told me a few years ago, he said, hey, I can't afford a Corvette or these big trucks and everything else. He said, you know, they've got to remember that when they start cutting pay and everything else.
That's an excellent point. And at the end of this, you know, I look at all this stuff that's going on. The messaging that they've got is fantastic. I got to be honest.
Oh, yeah. They it's almost like they have a playbook that comes out and Rover, one of these people, puts it out there. And then they have conferences with probably Alec. And they say, this is how you sell it. Be careful. Get the people at the churches and catch the people here and there and soften it and tell them that you're doing this out of the kindness of your heart. It's going to make for a great grand society.
Yeah, I mean, to have someone like the Koch brothers or the DeVos's or these billionaires saying we care about workers, we care about them, we want them to have freedom and choice. I mean, it sounds wonderful.
It's like Montgomery Burns from The Simpsons.
Yeah, excellent point. But you know, at the end of it, it's a screw job top to bottom. And how do you as a legislator, if this pops up, how do you fight that back? I mean, because the flowery language, oh, we care about your rights. You should have the right to choose. And you know, most people who don't know the issue, who are never going to be part of a union, think, wow, it sounds great. I mean, who could be against that?
I look again to the past election. We were smart, and we were. It lit a fire under all of us when they tried the things with the voter ID law. Right. It motivated many of us to get out and tell people this is what's really going on. And the best thing we had was when Thursday came on national news with that blip and said that he was going to deliver Pennsylvania for Romney. Those kind of things we have to get out, and we have to show the public how they're being screwed and how these kind of things are going to affect them in the long run.
Yeah, good old Mike Turzai.
Yeah.
Voter ID, which is going to allow Governor Romney to win the state of Pennsylvania. Done.
Done.
He's done.
I'll tell you, I'm angry and I'm frustrated. I want to ask you a couple other questions about some stuff that's going on. You know, the exchanges that the governor said he's not going to set up and the Medicaid money that he said he's not going to take. Personally, I'm not all that upset about him saying no to the exchange. With someone like him and the Republicans being in charge of setting it up, I don't know that the federal plan could be any worse than what they would set up.
Well, in the words of Slavoj Zizek, words are never words. Words are never only words. They matter because they define the contours of what we can do. I look at that as a political ploy. He owed somebody. He had to say that. He knows in January that we come back and that we're going to say, you know, there's got to be mediation. There's got to be something that gives the consumer the protection. Just as an aside, I spent all this week and part of last week fighting Highmark, a couple other local insurance companies, over coverage that should be afforded to people who have lost limbs and they can't be covered, compensated. It's really sickening to have to deal with that. It's not in my job description. fortune, and I came on board on these late in the game on them. But it's just a very frustrating thing for me.
And the thing that gets me, and you know, I keep hearing people say, oh, Obamacare is going to destroy the economy. I'm going, well, then if there are things you don't like about it, let's fix the minor things. My Tea Party dentist, you know, yes, I have a Tea Party dentist, was all upset that, you know what, for a crown, they're going to put a 2% tax on any crown that I have to sell. And people are going to stop getting crowns because of a 2% tax. I'm going, are you insane?
And it's all the way they sell it. It was probably packaged to that dentist that it was the regulation, because my general physician is the same way. He told me the other day he doesn't vote, and I asked him why, and he said he fought in Vietnam to have that right to not vote. And I said, that doesn't make any sense. And he said, it's just what group is going to get there and waste money. And I asked him, I said, is the Federal Highway Administration a waste? Is the regulations on food and drug and everything else? So many things I could point to, but it was the way things were sold to him.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's the messaging. You got to give the right wing credit. They've bought up most of the media. They own most of the newspapers. You keep hearing this, oh, there's a liberal media owned by mega corporations. 80% of everything we see, hear, and read owned by a handful of companies. Big multinational corporations, not little mom and pops like it should be, but these big behemoths who, well, to them, it's about the bottom line.
Follow the money. Follow the money, and you'll see what this insurance industry. They're ruthless. They have no heart, and I think they've got a special place down below when they pass on.
I hope so.
With the way they are treating people, but follow the money, and you'll see who the biggest ones are that are fighting this modernization, I call it. But it's just what FDR went through with a lot of things, and I give Obama credit, and I hope he's like Clinton when they impeached him. I hope he comes out swinging. And I think he's going to win.
I hope so. But I look at this, you know, these exchanges. And to me, I think I would rather have the federal plan than whatever it is that they can set up. And the Medicaid money, it just makes no sense to me why you wouldn't take that. But then again, I look at what this governor has done. I look at right when he came into office, he kicked some 41,000 people off of adult basic, low-wage working people, off of very minimal insurance, kicked them to the curb. Kicked 88,000 kids off the CHIP program, eviscerated and ended the general assistance budget. I mean, the priorities are what they are. Screw the poor and tax handouts for the wealthy.
And look at the people he has with him in his administration. It's a rudderless ship that these people are beholden to, these corporations that they're going to go back to hopefully in 2 years. But they've got to make that job better for them and their cohorts that are giving them the money to keep going. That's how it works.
Yeah. Let me ask you about the privatization, the scheme to privatize the lottery. Again, another one of these backroom deals. And you know, I thought the Republicans, when they came into power in 2010, said that they were going to be the party of sunshine and accountability and openness. Am I missing something?
Openness always gets me. I dealt with something today that I was working with the governor's office in Harrisburg at budget time, June 27th. I haven't gotten a return call on that. They've designated Erie as a rural county as far as reimbursement for autism and things like that. We're having a public hearing here tomorrow with the Senate. But, yeah, there's not much openness, and they don't seem to get phone calls or return letters.
But this idea that, and, you know, I go back and I think, you know, because I have some very conservative friends who are true valued people. I mean, I respect their opinion, and we have honest disagreements. But, you know, there are things where they go, yeah, you're probably right, and we have honest discussions. They look at the privatization of the lottery as just a dumb idea, especially when you only had one person bidding on it.
And see, that's an issue that hits the pocketbook directly, and that's why people can relate to it. But if it were a savings and loan scandal, people would say, oh, that's bad, but they wouldn't understand as it unfolded. And they want to grasp it, but they're working two and three jobs. But people now are waking up because they go in each week and put that $5 and $10 in the machine or pay that for the ticket. Now it's something that they can grasp and they can feel personally. Now it's something that you'll see pushback, I'm sure.
No, I hope so. I mean, I'm hoping after what happened in Michigan, it wakes people up here in Pennsylvania to where we start seeing people in the streets saying enough of this right-wing nonsense. We need to start talking about creating jobs. And, you know, like Sterla said, is American for Prosperity, are they going to present the governor's transportation bill?
Well, if we go down the road of Wisconsin, I was just in the attic getting Christmas things out, and I've got the sleeping bag out. I'm going to get it cleaned. If we have to stay overnight down there, I'm up for a good fight come January 1.
Yeah, well, I wonder if the folks on horses here will be trampling people and the cops with the pepper spray. I'm just amazed at how And I guess that really shouldn't be, especially in Michigan where they had the newspaper lockout back in the 90s where the Sterling Heights cops were beating people with clubs in the streets. I guess I shouldn't be surprised.
No, and I even think back to a couple years ago when people said to me when Spector was around, hey, we got to fight that card check. These were staunch Republicans. Hey, if we can get rid of that card check, we'll go easy on other things. We can look the other way on other things. Boy, we were all buffaloed, and I think that was a wake-up call to many, and it was to me, that these people are you know, they're looking at any point to get any rung that they can climb. That's where they're going to go.
But that's an excellent point, you know, because the Michigan governor, to me, a very Machiavellian way, said, you know what, his rationale was, they went after putting collective bargaining on the Constitution, so we had to do this because they didn't listen to us. And I'm going, that's your rationale for screwing working people and all the people who are going to suffer because of this, because they wanted to participate in their democracy? Really?
Yeah. Expect the unexpected is what I tell my new colleagues coming in. Be ready at any turn, and when you think things are going rosy, think, because behind some door somebody's coming up with something that's crazy.
Yeah, I got to tell you, I don't know how you do it, man. But it's a good thing I'm not a member of the legislature.
I got a speed bag and a heavy bag in the garage, and I just got my blood pressure medicine increased this afternoon.
I appreciate the work that you do. I got to tell you, a speed bag probably wouldn't be enough for me, but I appreciate the work that you do, and I'd love to have you back because I know these fights are ramping up. Love to have you back.
Thank you very much, and I appreciate it, and happy holidays.
You too. Thanks so much, Pat. Pennsylvania State Representative Pat Harkins. Let's take a quick break. Back with your thoughts. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. This is the Rick Smith Show.
It's blowing everywhere.
Oh, a mighty wind's a-blowing. It's kicking up the sand. It's blowing out a message to every woman, child, and man. Yes, a mighty wind's a-blowing. Across the land and across the sea. It's blowing peace and freedom. It's blowing equality. Yes, it's blowing peace and freedom. It's blowing you and me.
The Rick Smith Show. Changing America for the better.
Are you feeling that back-to-school squeeze? Backpacks, clothes, shoes, all the things they have to have because last year's stuff is so last year. If you have a supply shortage, we can help. Know what it's like, and we've got the ultimate hall pass for you. Transfer your high interest and department store balances to PSECU. Our Visa balance transfer has a low 2.9 annual percentage rate, good through New Year's Eve of 2013. We don't charge you a transfer fee, and you can roll up to $20,000 in balances if you qualify. That's a lot of swag. Financing life is what we do best. Talk with us. Call 800-LOAN-555 or visit psecu.com/visa for complete program details.
This credit union is federally insured by the National Credit Union Administration, Equal Opportunity Lender.
One pretty good rule in making public policy proposals is this. If you're going to cite a source in support of your plan, first, confirm that your source actually does support your plan. Republican budgeteer John Boehner recently put a new deficit reduction proposal on the table, asserting that it incorporated the numbers of a plan put forth earlier by budget expert Erskine Bowles, a Democrat. Aha, gloated the GOP leader to Barack Obama as he plopped down this bit of budgetary bipartisanship. Gotcha. Not quite. Bowles promptly retorted that his numbers were not really a plan, but were simply back-of-the-envelope ideas, adding that the numbers are no longer correct. And that pretty well sums up the slapdash package that Boehner called credible. For example, he says it saves $600 billion by raising the eligibility age for Medicare to 67. That'd be no problem for Congress critters who do no heavy lifting and already get full medical benefits from taxpayers. But it's not a credible idea for millions of working-class folks who actually do heavy lifting and are not able to work an extra 2 years. Another incredible piece of Boehner's handiwork is the claim that it'll save $800 billion by eliminating unspecified tax deductions. However, the only way to reach that number is by severely whacking the deductions that people get for donations to churches, hospitals, universities, and other charities. Do Republicans really intend to do that? Or did they just not have a calculator on hand when they put this mishmash together? This is Jim Hightower saying, Boehner keeps failing the bogusity test because his numbers are, well, bogus. And he's using bad numbers just to prevent pampered rich people from paying a little bit more into our nation's public treasury. That's not only deceitful, it's seriously shameful.
To get more of Jim Hightower's populist take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to, visit www.hightowerlowdown.org.
One pretty good...
Uncovering the con in conservatism. Rick Smith.
Gotta find a way to hold it to account. People didn't find a way to snuff our voices out. Can you hear us?
Check out the website, TheRickSmithShow.com. Questions, comments, something in your mind, you can email me, Rick, at TheRickSmithShow.com, or give us a call, 1-888-520-7425. That's 1-888-520-RICK. I listened to some of the discussion yesterday from the floor there in Michigan, where, you know, they had to go up and you get a couple minutes in, and of course you had, you know, Democratic representatives saying, hey, you know what, this is a screw job, and they went through all of the, you know, quick arguments you can make, because they only had a couple minutes apiece, you know, the Lincoln quote, and obviously me personally, I would have used the entire Eisenhower quote, but you know, they only used the nice half, the half that says, you know, the people who are against unemployment and labor unions and the farm bill and all and Social Security. You wouldn't hear from those people in their political history. There's a few of them that are, you know, outliers. The rest of the quote is their numbers are negligible and they're stupid. And the reality is the party of stupid is running this country. And that was never more highlighted for me. When I listened to this woman, it caught my ear. She was talking about her husband, was a corrections officer there in Michigan, a union member, Brad. And she said that, you know, when the prison people were going after Brad, like, she understood that the company, the boss, the power would target people. And you need that protection. She got it. And I'm listening to her tell about how, you know, and the union went to fight for him and help protect him and stand up for him and, you know, didn't allow them to steamroll over him. But you know what? She said, we're a union family and we'll be a union family tomorrow, but I'm going to vote for this nonsense anyway. And I just kept going, wow, is it that? And I'd love to get a hold of this woman because I really want to understand where she's coming from. She understands that, you know, an employee can be targeted and the union will stand up for them. She gets that the benefits and the wages and all that stuff come from the contract. Yet what she's voting for, and she's a Republican legislator who voted for this no rights at work agenda. Does she not understand that what she's actually doing is making it that much more difficult for her husband? Well, then you get into the real nuts and bolts. And you find out later, after the fact, and I just found this out. I wish I would have known this yesterday because I would have talked about it yesterday. That she tried to get, because they exempted fire and policemen from it. Because generally they vote Republican. And just like they tried in Wisconsin. But she also wanted to add, guess what? Come on, you know. She wanted to add, along with firemen and firefighters and police officers, wanted to add corrections people. Exempting them from the ugliness that she was passing. Actually proposed an amendment to it. And you go, you know, you think about it. If she believes this is such a good thing for the state, if she believes it's such a good thing for workers and it's freedom for people to choose, why would she try to amend the law to cut her husband out of it? I mean, stop and think about it for a minute. Understands that this is going to be a horrible thing. Understands it's going to harm her husband. Yet votes for it anyway. So what is it? Is it total disconnect? Is it ignorance? Or is it the power of an influence of money? And when each of my right-wing friends called and gave me the, my team won, but couldn't explain what they had won. And when my Tea Party hygienist said, well, you know, I'm a libertarian and I believe what, when the conversation turned to money, you know what every one of them agreed on? Eventually, after some common sense discussion, that we need to get big money out of politics. We need to get the Kochs and the DeVosses and the Adelsons and the Basels and all of these wealthy billionaires out of the process. We should not have the best democracy money can buy. We should have the best democracy possible. And we can have all those conversations on how you get there. But the first step has to be taking the money out of the process and opening up the sanitizing effect of sunlight. I want to know who's paying who and where the money's coming from and where all these campaign contributions. It should be right out in the open. And they say, well, you know, those unions spend money on politics. Yeah. They do. They spend money that members donate. And they have to account for it. Openly. And in a transparent way. And I keep saying, well, we should treat the Koch brothers and the DeVosses and all of those folks the same way we treat the AFL-CIO or the same way we treat any other group. We should know where the money's coming from. We should know who's doing it. Because I want to know what is behind. What's behind these people? And I guarantee you it's the money. And what scares me, it's not even all that much money. You know, $10,000, $20,000, $100,000. Which in the grand scheme, when you look at what they get back, not a lot of money. Gonna take a quick break. When we come back, gonna talk about what's going on here in the state with the state system of higher education and the faculty and negotiations. We're gonna have Steve Hicks. Stick around, right back after this. And take your money. All they wanna do is
to the Rick Smith Show.
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I have some great news. You can now get the Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm on demand and on the go. Get your class war to go by downloading the Stitcher app on your smartphone by going to Stitcher.com and search for the Rick Smith Show, or go to our website at thericksmithshow.com and click on our Stitcher button. Together we can and we will rebuild a prosperous working class and leave opportunity for our children.
Ganley Law is a proud sponsor of the Rick Smith Show. To better serve you, Ganley Law has 9 offices throughout Pennsylvania. Call our main office in Waynesboro. If we think we can help you, we'll schedule a time and place that is convenient for you for a confidential initial consultation at no charge. At Ganley Law, you pay no retainer and no attorney fees unless we are successful in bringing your claim. Our experienced attorneys, Charles Ganley and Deborah Packer, will fight for your rights. If you face a work-related injury, an occupational disease such as hearing loss, work-related hepatitis, or HIV, sexual harassment, or employment discrimination, call Ganley Law. That's toll-free statewide at 1-888-FIGHT-17. That's 1-888-334-4817. Ganley Law, fighting for workers' rights, fighting for your rights.
Also at GanleyLaw.com.
Earth,
sky.
On a dark night, where you can see the band of the Milky Way arching overhead, look closely. There are pockets between the stars where the light seems to be missing.
But this seemingly empty space between the stars isn't really empty. It is much emptier than anything here on Earth. But nearly one-sixth of the mass of our home galaxy, the Milky Way, lives in the space between the stars. The stuff between stars is called interstellar medium. It contains ingredients for making new planets, asteroids, and stars.
The space between stars, the interstellar medium, is 99% gas. About three-quarters of that gas is hydrogen, the thermonuclear fuel that powers our sun and all stars for most of their lives.
The other 1% of the space between stars is interstellar dust. This dust in space consists of grains of ice, carbon compounds, and silicate. The interstellar medium is shaped by stellar winds, dying stars, the magnetic fields of galaxies, and vast supernova explosions.
All that matter and activity, and yet most of the stuff between stars, is invisible to our eyes. Modern astronomers explore the interstellar medium using special kinds of telescopes, sensitive to radiation in the radio, infrared, and X-ray parts of the spectrum. Come to EarthSky.org and search for the words interstellar medium to learn more. EarthSky is a clear voice for science.
We're at EarthSky.org.
They believe in teachers' unions. We believe in teachers.
What they do, they smile in your face.
All the time they want to take your place, the backstabbers. Backstabbers.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, TheRickSmithShow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, you can email me, Rick@TheRickSmithShow.com. You look at the story yesterday about what's going on with the 14 state-owned universities, you know, Shippensburg, Millersville, and the rest of them, and the negotiation between the state system of higher education and the union there, APSCoF, the Association of Pennsylvania State College and University Faculties. The negotiations have been going on for, it's been like 17 months now, where they just, and this is what happens when you see this anti-worker stance that companies can now take. There are no teeth in the labor law, nothing to force people together, nothing to force both sides into negotiation, none of this. So what you've got is you've got the chancellor who, the way I see it, has dug in, completely dug in. It's my way or the highway. And you've got the faculty who are now going, well, what do? We don't want to strike. We don't want to go in and disrupt what's going on the campuses. But at some point, you got to defend what your career. You've got to defend your job. You've got to stand up. And there's some who say, well, you know what? They should do whatever they want. Okay. Well, you know what it'll be? They're going to do to the state system what they've done to higher ed in the private industry. And again, this is what blows my mind is there are people, well, that's a good idea. We should do what they've done. All adjunct professors who teach classes online, with no backing, no decent wages, no say in how the courses are taught, none of that. Just used, abused, and just churned through. And this is where we're heading. When you don't have the ability, the power, the chance to negotiate on equal terms, you're going to end up losing every time. And what's going on right now, the balance of power, the ability of the employer, be it the state system of higher ed or the Koch brothers or whoever, when you give one party over the other the upper hand, you're going to see abuse. And what we're seeing right now in front of us, we're seeing the abuse of a broken labor law system. And this no rights at work agenda that they're ramming through, I'm telling you, this is horrible timing. Horrible stuff. We couldn't get a hold of Steve Hicks from APSCoF, so I'm just going to move along. I was looking at this story on charter schools here in the state. And, the reason these charter schools, especially the cyber charters, the reason you're seeing the big money going after, you've got to break those teachers' unions, screwing those teachers. Of the 16 that they have, none of them none of them have made real progress. The AYP, the average yearly progress. If you gauge them the way you gauge a regular school, you know, the public school, the brick and mortar school in your neighborhood, if you judge them in the same context, none of them. But, you know, with that kind of success, I guess we're considering another, what, eight more? Another eight that are not going to, I shouldn't say that. If you look at what history has given us, if you look at what the cyber charter schools have done, we've thrown a whole ton of money at them. Tons of money we've thrown at. And you look at the fact that in the state of Pennsylvania, the largest cyber charter school is currently under investigation by the FBI. You know, not doing what they were supposed to do. You know, that whole, well, we're gonna get computers to kids. We're going to make sure that the kids who are going to be doing their schoolwork online have access to the Internet. Oh, yeah, we're going to make sure of that. Yeah, right. But you look at the money that we've thrown into this. And it's a lose-lose proposition. Because what happens is the school district loses the money. It disappears in the hands of consultants and managers. It doesn't really get to the classroom very much. And the students end up getting screwed. And what bothers me, I saw this story, Reuters did a story, I think it was the end of last week, where they were talking about Louisiana, and they had talked about the superintendent of the school of education for Louisiana, a guy named John White, and he's of the mindset that, you know what, schools are just too confining. We should have open curriculum. We should have kids who can, you know, it should be like ordering off of the sides menu at Denny's. We should be able to pick and choose and do all these different things, which, you know, in theory, I'm not totally against. You follow what your interests are. But what we've seen is it's not working. You know, this idea that, you know, a fifth or sixth grade kid is going to know what direction. You know, when you're in college, yeah, I'm okay with that because you're starting to pick a career path. But when you're in fourth, fifth grade, I don't know. I'm against the idea of there being, oh, whatever you want. Choose whatever you want. Follow your, as someone who has spent the last 2 years coaching, fifth and sixth grade girls basketball, I know what happens when, go ahead, do what you want to do, is the mentality. Choose your own path. Yes, go that way. I know what happens. Nothing. Nothing positive. So when I look at what Louisiana wants to do, setting up these, well, you set up, and I guess I could set my own school up. Because you look at the Louisiana Public Broadcasting Company, which has set up a, get this, they have set up a class, I mean, I can't even say this, they have set up an environmental science class. This is the Louisiana Public Broadcasting Company. They have set up an environmental science class that you can take online for $1,280. The school district will pay it. Don't worry about it. It's not your money. Don't worry about it. And the class is a bunch of, you're watching TV documentaries that they played on public TV. And I'm going, what's educational about that? I mean, why is that part of an environmental science course? I mean, I get the value of watching the films. I get the value of talking about them. But for $1,280, an online course, I'm sorry. And then one of my favorite ones was a woman who runs a faith-based school. The faith-based people. She's going to offer an entrepreneur class, you know, on how to be entrepreneurial in a faith-based way. And it's only going to cost $900. And I'm going, I'm confused. How is that biblical? If I remember correctly, you know, the only time Jesus ever got mad was when he was flipping over the tables full of money changers in the church, if I remember correctly. But here, this faith-based school is going to charge $900 for an entrepreneur class. and the textbook. You know, evidently her concept was, well, we're gonna use the Bible. Evidently that she's been asked to redo that. But you know, look at these pick and choose courses. You've got the ABC people, the scab contractors, who are setting up courses on carpentry. So they're going to get cheap, well, free labor to come in and pay $550 because the state's going to pay. I guess it's the state paying. It's not like the kids are paying it. $550 to be free labor for these contractors. I mean, really, this is beautiful. We're going to get the taxpayer to fund cheap labor so that kids might, well, I'm almost, my head's about to explode when I think of all of the scams and all of the schemes and the entrepreneurial activity that's going to go on around education in this state. And the question is, you know, like I had with my Tea Party hygienist this morning, where do we stop the waste, fraud, and abuse? And I look at the charter schools and I look at the cyber charter schools. You want to talk about waste, fraud, and abuse? There's a nice place to start. And I think all of this has to come back to some simple common truths that we, the people, have to come up with. And public education being one of them. And bringing people back to the public schools. Getting those people who are going to fight and make sure that all kids rise up instead of just a handful. But I look at this thing in Louisiana. Boy, you know, they really took advantage of what happened after Hurricane Katrina. They really took advantage of a crisis. And again, you know, that wasn't something that they created. It's something that they took advantage of. This whole privatization of education, this whole push to profitize education. And you look at, you know, the reality. I guess the court in Louisiana just turned back the one charter bill or the one voucher bill that Bobby Jindal wanted to ram through. And you go, well, when do we hold these people accountable? You look here in the state, all of the overreach, the voter bill, the Act 13 where they wanted to take local control away, the redistricting that was thrown out, unconstitutional. You look around the country, all of this stuff that's going on. When do we hold these people accountable? Hopefully very, very soon. Anyway, if you missed any portion of the program, you can download our podcast there at thericksmithshow.com. Also, if you've got a smartphone, get the Stitcher app. You can take the program on the go. Stitcher, one of my favorite apps. All of our archives are there. You can also email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. I do answer all emails personally. Going to come back in the second hour. Going to focus on, you know, where do we go? Going to talk about a little history about what's going on in Michigan and so much more. Your calls as well. Quick break, back with hour two.
Radio of, for, and by we the working people. The Rick Smith Show.
You are listening to The Rick Smith Show on WIOO 97.9 Carlisle and 93.9 Shippensburg. We're back live in the studio tonight and every weeknight from 9 to midnight. Got something on your mind? Give us a call, 1-888-520-RICK. That's 1-888-520-7425.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham.
Shame on you! Shame on you! Shame on you!
Angry protesting Michigan workers confronting police on Tuesday at Michigan State Capitol. Thousands of people gathered at Michigan State Capitol to protest final passage of the anti-union legislation known as Right to Work. Police pepper sprayed at least one person and at least two pro-union protesters were arrested. About 12,000 people turned out to protest the attack on unions. The anti-union Tea Party group Americans for Prosperity erected a tent on the Capitol lawn, but it was torn down by protesters. This is what it sounded like as that tent came down.
so-called right-to-work law will be signed by Michigan Governor Rick Snyder very soon as the Republican-controlled government in Michigan rushes it through the lame duck session. This is the latest Republican Party attack on the organized power and rights of working people. Unions in Michigan, including the United Auto Workers, are vowing a protracted and powerful fight back against the politicians responsible for this anti-union attack. In more than 100 events coast-to-coast this week, working families called on their congressional representatives to reject cuts for Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid, and to stop tax giveaways to the rich. The AFL-CIO says in a variety of ways, people sent the message to Congress to make the people's will crystal clear. From candlelight vigils to caroling to petition signatures and rallies, politicians were told to keep their hands off earned benefit programs that are vital to working people. Poll after poll demonstrates strong majorities of Americans want no cuts to Social Security and Medicare, while they do want the rich to be taxed more. Polls also show people blame Republicans more than Democrats or President Obama for the so-called fiscal cliff standoff. A Connecticut conference about attacks on civil liberties in the U.S. is leading to formation of a civil liberties solidarity network. Melinda Tuhus reports.
The conference theme was, "An injury to one is an injury to all," which harkened back to a 19th century labor slogan. John Woodruff, Jr., the Northeast International Rep for the United Electrical Workers Union, spoke on the morning panel that also featured representatives of an immigrants' rights group, Muslim Americans, a prison abolition group, and the American Civil Liberties Union.
The broader history of the labor movement, labor history in this country, has gone hand in hand with violent attacks on our civil liberties from our founding. Our union, the UE, was one of the first national unions to come out and say that you have rights, not only in this country, but in the union.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
The man who sends the investor class diving for their tax shelters. Rick Smith.
Back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, TheRickSmithShow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, you can email me, Rick@TheRickSmithShow.com. If you missed any portion of the program, you can download the podcast there at the website or get the Stitcher app. Take the program on the go. So yesterday I spent a good portion of the day listening to the Michigan governor, telling the right-wing history of labor in this country. In a very corporate, very Wall Street way, saying, well, what unions need to do is they need to be a service, they need to be a commodity. Not a movement, not getting people together to make, enact social change and move the country forward. No. Like Aflac. Unions are like Aflac. That's what I heard the governor talking about. I guess what's going on is we've allowed the right wing to tell labor's history. So here to talk about a little bit what goes on there in Michigan, I've asked Victoria Goff, writer and activist, on labor history there in Michigan to come talk to us about why the no rights at work and why that passage is so important. Victoria, thanks for taking time for me.
Hello.
Yeah, thanks for taking time for me. I look at this and, I listened to the governor yesterday. He gave a very nice history. Labor unions are just kind of like Aflac.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, it's been pretty amazing to watch what's being said about unions right now. And actually been doing this rewriting of history for quite a while now. The organization the think tank that Rick Snyder's really closely associated with is the Mackinac Policy Center.
Yep.
And they have actually been writing regular commentary in our local newspapers about the Flint sit-down strike and just taking the time to consistently over the past 2 years or so to just really rewrite the role of different workers and to reimagine what people called at the time scabs, to reimagine those people as kind of like brave people who were standing up against, the thugs, the violent union thugs. So, yeah, this has been going on for a while now.
Yeah, I mean, last year I got pitched, I get authors who pitched their books to me to come on the program, and I got pitched an author last year of a woman who wrote a book. Her grandfather was a scab during the Homestead strike, And, you know, it made him out to be this grand hero and all of this stuff. I'm going, really? We're now idolizing scabs? There's something seriously wrong with that.
Right. Especially seeing is that I just recently did an interview with Geraldine Blankenship, who is one of the last survivors from the Flint sit-down strike. And she talked about just the extreme violence that Flint sit-downers had to live through. Like, her father had gotten beaten up by a whole group of people. And, like, when they had meetings before the strike actually happened, they had to do them in private because they had company thugs going out attacking them and at their homes. And there were several instances of being chased down by cars and or being carloads of these corporate hired thugs. And, yeah, I agree with you that it just doesn't make a lot of sense with the clearing.
Yeah, I mean, you can go back through history. And the sad reality, Victoria, is our education system has walked away from labor history and by design. The wealth class of this country by design has not allowed the teaching of our history because, look, they're telling the story. They're the ones out there spinning that, you know, hey, things, the unions were good back in the old days when things were really bad. And things are so good right now. Things are wonderful right now. You know, the benevolent corporation's taking care of you. You don't need that. And I go, are things really that great right now?
Right, exactly. They're not. And this is like a purposeful attempt to just really deny the overall just like effect that the unions have, where it's not about getting better pay and it's not just about getting better worker conditions. For example, the march on Washington that Martin Luther King participated in, where he gave his really famous "I Have a Dream" speech, that was sponsored and co-hosted or sponsored by a union. And
absolutely.
So, like, that's something that we don't ever learn in our history classes is that, like, the slogan of that was freedom and jobs. Civil rights and jobs, worker rights have always gone hand in hand, as has, like, anti-sexual harassment laws and gender equality. Like, all of these different social justice movements across the board have always been influenced by labor unions. And so I think it's really important for the right to minimize how important labor unions are across the board.
Yeah, I think it's important that you bring that up because, you know, you go back and you think of how long the corporatists have used the anti-worker attacks. Because right to work, the no rights at work agenda, that really started as a Southern thing. Because of exactly what you pointed out. Because Martin Luther King said, look, there are no rights, there's no work. You can call it whatever you want, you put some rights in there, you put some work in there, maybe we'll talk. But there are no rights, there are no work. And it was something that was used in the South, a way to divide people and keep each other at each other's throats.
Right, exactly. And one of the very first right-to-work states was Mississippi. And they were specifically targeting black and white or black and Latino alliances that were being created despite the so-called illegal immigration of Latino workers. They were specifically targeting that relationship, trying to create strife so that, and really pointing out how so-called illegals are stealing jobs and all that, hoping to incite just really to break that alliance and to break that relationship between workers. But what they were doing was attacking workers through civil rights.
Yeah. You know, your governor kept throwing up this phrase of value proposition, and it's kind of stuck in my head because what the right has done really, and you got to give them credit, they've used very simplistic language. They've used very, very shallow arguments that seem logical at its face, and they've really tried to redefine what the union movement is. And what they've done is they've made it just like insurance. You know, it's a product you buy. It's, you know, it's like a mop on the shelf. You bought dish soap or whatever. And, you know, to me, being a member of a union and have been for most of my working life, It's about more than that. It's about fighting for equal justice. It's about fighting for the ability to be in the middle class. And, you know, I'm curious, you know, in looking at your experience with the history of labor, especially in Michigan, you know, do people see the irony in the discussion that's being had? Because, you know, look, labor brought people kicking and screaming into the middle class. You know, and I think that has to be told.
Right, yes. And people absolutely see the irony right now, especially when the two bigger cities in Michigan, which is Flint and Detroit, they've seen just untold levels of decimation of the middle class. And, that is something that is really hitting people up in the faces right now. And I think, unfortunately, there's a lot of complacency that was going on where, like, because Michigan is such a union stronghold, people didn't think something like this could happen. And now we are taken a little bit off guard by what has been going on.
Yeah.
So,
you know, I look at it, and, you know, the thing that gets me is, aside from the fact that they passed it, is the way they went about it. I mean,
right.
To me, it's that you want to talk about having something rammed down your throat, and the people who told us they were going to bring us openness and transparency and all of that didn't. I mean, the fact that there was no public input whatsoever, no hearings whatsoever, I have a serious problem with that.
Yeah. And the bigger thing that I'm just astonished by is that the emergency financial manager laws that have been – we've been fighting those for about 2 years now – and those are so heavily centered on being anti-union and on just really attacking the unions. And the whole basis of those financial managers is that they have the right to end a union contract. And they have done that in Flint and in Detroit. So we knew from the beginning that this was, it was going to be a long fight. We knew the governor was very much anti-union, but the way that they have done it in the last 2 weeks here, just ramming through constant bills without any chance at all to protest, and it's just been unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's another one of those things where, you know, they want to impose their will in this emergency. You know, the little dictators that they call emergency managers impose their will over sitting down and having an honest negotiation. And this is what happens when you give way too much power to one group. And they've given too much power to these little dictators. And we as a nation have given way too much power to this Republican Party, who has shown their true colors. It's not about oversight. It's not about openness. It's not about transparency. And it sure as hell is not about creating jobs, because it does none of these things.
Absolutely not. It absolutely does not do any of those things. And this is an example. It's there was a recent protest by our union in Detroit over the water. They're trying to privatize the water system.
Yeah.
And just in doing that, they were going to take away, I believe it was like 81 jobs that they would be losing by privatizing the water system. So it's, these laws are absolutely not about creating jobs.
Yeah, a little bit later in the program, we're going to talk with Susan Ryan, one of the folks from AFSCME 207, who was one of the folks who fought that fight. We're going to talk a little bit about that. But, you know, bringing back this history component, you know, the sad reality is what's going on. And I think as density has gone down, as the attacks on workers and their unions has continued, we've seen the number of folks being able to be in unions and being able to move up into the middle class. We've seen that shrinking. So I guess the question is, you know, in looking back to history, we're now going to have to rebuild. You're going to have to see folks, you know, doing a lot more organizing and a lot more getting out in the streets. You know, take me back to history. You know, how did we build this middle class? How did we build this this labor movement from history?
Well, we did it by not focusing solely and 100% on just improving pay. Just as an example, with the Flint sit-down strike, if you watch I can't think of the name of the movie, but with Babies and Banners is what it is. And it focuses on the women in the emergency, or in the, I'm losing it. But anyway, it's the movie called Babies with Banners, and it focuses on the women who organized and supported the men. And they speak very compellingly in that movie about how the things that they were looking for were good husbands, husbands who wouldn't come home and completely collapse when they got home. They were looking for, because they were so exhausted, They were looking for things like not being forced to have sex with their bosses at work. There's one instance where a woman talks about an entire room of women had to go and get tested for STIs because they were all forced to have sex with their boss. So what they talked about then was that they wanted to have a better pay, yes, but they also wanted to have a quality of life. And by hitting up the quality of life thing, where they're like, we'd like to be able to spend time with our kids after we get home. We'd like to be able to rest and to, you know, heal our bodies after working hard all day. And eventually that shifted into, we'd like, you know, to have equality with our fellow workers. You know, the UAW in Flint was one of the first unions that incorporated black workers into it. So, but consistently throughout the UAW's history in particular, looking at unions as being a social movement has really helped and really been beneficial. And when they moved away from that, like they did in the 80s, that's when they got really hard hit. And that's when all the hits started to happen with NAFTA and all these different free trade agreements.
Yeah, well, you know, maybe Rick Snyder's right. Maybe this is what needs to happen. To shake folks awake. Maybe this is what happens. Maybe this will be for the best. I don't believe it, but maybe it will be.
Yeah, I don't believe that either.
I don't know. Anyway, Victoria, I appreciate the time. I appreciate the input. Thanks so much.
Yeah, no problem.
Let's take a quick break. Back with your thoughts after this. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. This is the Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Smith Show. AFSCME Council 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? AFSCME Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561.
One pretty good rule in making public policy proposals is this. If you're going to cite a source in support of your plan, first confirm that your source actually does support your plan. Republican budgeteer John Boehner recently put a new deficit reduction proposal on the table, asserting that it incorporated the numbers of a plan put forth earlier by budget expert Erskine Bowles, a Democrat. Aha, gloated the GOP leader to Barack Obama as he plopped down this bit of budgetary bipartisanship. Gotcha. Not quite. Bowles promptly retorted that his numbers were not really a plan, but were simply back-of-the-envelope ideas, adding that the numbers are no longer correct. And that pretty well sums up the slapdash package that Boehner called credible. For example, he says it saves $600 billion by raising the eligibility age for Medicare to 67. That'd be no problem for Congress critters who do no heavy lifting and already get full medical benefits from taxpayers. But it's not a credible idea for millions of working class folks who actually do heavy lifting and are not able to work an extra 2 years. Another incredible piece of Boehner's handiwork is the claim that it'll save $800 billion by eliminating unspecified tax deductions. However, the only way to reach that number is by severely whacking the deductions that people get for donations to churches, hospitals, universities, and other charities. Do Republicans really intend to do that? or did they just not have a calculator on hand when they put this mishmash together? This is Jim Hightower saying, Boehner keeps failing the bogusity test because his numbers are, well, bogus. And he's using bad numbers just to prevent pampered rich people from paying a little bit more into our nation's public treasury. That's not only deceitful, it's seriously shameful.
To get more of Jim Hightower's populist take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to, visit www.hightowerlowdown.org.
We're going to start in a couple weeks with our budget adjustment bill. The first step is we're going to deal with collective bargaining for all public employee unions because you divide and conquer.
Divide and conquer. You heard him say it. I mean, you go back to the Jay Gould quote, I can easily pay half the working class to kill the other half. Right there. And he's talking to the billionaire Diane Hendricks. And, you know, hey, you know, when will Wisconsin's got be a right to work? You know, what gets a billionaire all tingly in the panties? Well, the only thing I can think of is a little bit more money, sure, but power. That thrill of having absolute and total control and no one to ever question you. I mean, think about, you know, the aphrodisiac of power. That's what they're looking for. And I got an email during the break. John sent me this article that, you know, made me go, this is exactly the problem. You know, in talking about the history, this is exactly this. I don't know who wrote it. I'm assuming John didn't write it, but this is exactly what the problem is. This person writes, I'm a senior citizen that failed to tell my children that my father, along with many others, had to endure what they had to go through without unions. And it goes through and says, you know, I'm sorry that I didn't tell my kids about, you know, how things used to be before the teachers union came in and saved the workplace. How if a married female got pregnant, she got fired because, well, we don't want kids to see pregnant women. She said, I never told my children that before their grandfather worked in a union shop, he was fired for no cause because the boss hated Dagos and the boss's brother needed a job. The author writes, I never told my children that my father was on strike with no money coming in for 105 days because the company wanted the employees to turn on the union, no other reason. Went in and said, look, said I never told my children when their grandfather got cancer and returned to work unable to do the job he was originally doing. It was the union who fought to have him reassigned to a task he could do. And ended up working at a job for 11 more years until he could retire at 55, something the union helped, along with the pension that he collected from the union. The author writes, I never told my children that when I belonged to a union, the union defended the author, the conditions. And this author says, I feel responsible for what happened in Michigan yesterday because I didn't teach my children. And I go back to this is a perfect piece of writing. I think back to my grandfather who said, and it's that mentality that we want the next generation to do much better than we did. And we pound it into our kids' heads, and my grandparents pounded it into their kids' heads, and my head, look, if you're doing, my grandfather told me flat out, if you end up driving a truck for a living, you're a failure. Because you should have opportunity to do much better. You're smarter than I am. You should have much more opportunity to do than what I did. And one generation told the next, and in this country we did do better generationally. The next generation did better and better and better. And we've now come to a point where we now look back and go, well, we're better than they were. We're much better than they were. We're better educated. But you look at the reality. The jobs that are created, they're not sustaining the families that my grandparents' generation could. I look at this contract I got sitting on my desk, 1979. My grandfather was driving a truck for a living in today's dollars, making over $31 an hour. with full health care, with vacation, sick days, all of that stuff. Solid middle class existence. Today, truck drivers are making what? 12, 15? Maybe a little more, depending on what they're doing. How many hours they're putting in. But you look at this, and you go back to the when workers were united, and we didn't allow ourselves to be divided, and we were telling our children. And, you know, I look at, you know, our senator, Pat Toomey. His father was a union member. How is it that someone who benefited from decent wages, benefited from the health care, benefited from all of the advantage that his father's membership had, how is it that he then turns and is, well, one of the most anti-union people there? And you see it, you know, down the line. You look at Kasich. His father was a postal worker. You know, how is it that we've failed to educate our children? How is it that we've allowed the history of the labor movement to be co-opted by the think tanks? I mean, they actually pitched me a book that, you know, the hero of this book was a scab from the Homestead strike. And I said, you've got to be kidding me. They're rewriting history because they can. Because there are too few of us that have actually learned and actually know what these events were about. I mean, you look here up here in Latimer, not too far from Harrisburg, up near Hazleton, where 19 workers were shot in the back by people who were deputized by the sheriff, by one of the deputies, not the sheriff. Sheriff was out of town. 100 Winchester, brand new Winchester rifles were handed out because they were preparing for war. And when these workers came peacefully marching down the road, unarmed, carrying the American flag, what happened? Well, 19 of them shot dead. 50-some more shot in the back, lay bloody and wounded. Did they deserve that? Well, if you listen to the right-wing think tanks, you listen to the spin, well, yes. They didn't listen. They wouldn't do what they were told. How dare they ask for decent working conditions? And the spin they put on it, and I love it. You know, they go, oh, wow, we've got such benevolent corporations today. It's wonderful. Such benevolent corporations. Things were so bad back then. And the unions were good back then. Yet I look at the jobs that we have here. And while we had covered the fast food workers' brief strike there in New York City, the one-day strike, the fast food forward campaign, I found it interesting that Bloomberg News had a piece today that caught my attention. The minimum wage that those fast food workers in New York are paid, do you know how many hours it would take, do you know how many years it would take for a McDonald's worker to make what the CEO of McDonald's makes? 1,000,000 hours. 1,000,000 hours. Stop and think about that. That's more than a century of punching the clock. Over 100 years of punching the clock, a minimum wage worker, that's how, and I don't know about you, but I don't live that long. And you look at the fact that studies have shown that in the next decade, over a quarter of the jobs in this country will be low-wage jobs. Do you know why they're going after and attacking unions? Do you know why they want to handcuff labor's ability to organize workers? Do you know why they want to do it? Because they see people in the streets going after Walmart, saying, you know what, you can pay a decent living wage. You've created a billionaire class unlike any other, where 4 of the billionaires control more wealth than the bottom 40% of this country. They see the workers at the fast food places working for minimum wage, unable to support their families. And you know what? They're scared to death that those people are going to say enough already. And it's time for us to say enough already. Going to take a quick break. more about what went on in Wisconsin. We're going to talk with Susan Ryan from Ask Me Local 207 out there. Quick break, back after this.
The Rick Smith Show, changing America for the better.
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I have some great news. You can now get the Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm on demand and on the go. Get your class war to go by downloading the Stitcher app on your smartphone by going to Stitcher.com and search for the Rick Smith Show, or go to our website at thericksmithshow.com and click on our Stitcher button. Together we can and we will rebuild a prosperous working class and leave opportunity for our children.
Ganley Law is a proud sponsor of the Rick Smith Show. To better serve you, Ganley Law has 9 offices throughout Pennsylvania. Call our main office in Waynesboro. If we think we can help you, we'll schedule a time and place that is convenient for you for a confidential initial consultation at no charge. At Ganley Law, you pay no retainer and no attorney fees unless we are successful in bringing your claim. Our experienced attorneys, Charles Ganley and Deborah Packer, will fight for your rights. If you face a work-related injury, an occupational disease such as hearing loss, work-related hepatitis or HIV, sexual harassment, or employment discrimination, call Ganley Law. That's toll-free statewide at 1-888-FIGHT-17. That's 1-888-334-4817. Ganley Law, fighting for workers' rights, fighting for your rights.
Also at GanleyLaw.com.
Earth, sky.
On a dark night, where you can see the band of the Milky Way arching overhead, look closely. There are pockets between the stars where the light seems to be missing.
But this seemingly empty space between the stars isn't really empty. It is much emptier than anything here on Earth. But nearly 1/6 of the mass of our home galaxy, the Milky Way, lives in the space between the stars. The stuff between stars is called interstellar medium. It contains ingredients for making new planets, asteroids, and stars.
The space between stars, the interstellar medium, is 99% gas. About 3/4 of that gas is hydrogen, the thermonuclear fuel that powers our sun and all stars for most of their lives.
The other 1% of the space between stars is interstellar dust. This dust in space consists of grains of ice, carbon compounds, and silicate. The interstellar medium is shaped by stellar winds, dying stars, the magnetic fields of galaxies, and vast supernova explosions.
All that matter and activity, and yet most of the stuff between stars, is invisible to our eyes. Modern astronomers explore the interstellar medium using special kinds of telescopes, sensitive to radiation in the radio, infrared, and X-ray parts of the spectrum. Come to EarthSky.org and search for the words interstellar medium to learn more. EarthSky is a clear voice for science.
We're at EarthSky.org.
Just when you thought it was safe, those crazy Republicans are at it again. It's time for the Rick Smith Show's Conservative Alerts.
You know, and another sign of petulance, and you look at what happened yesterday in Michigan, and I love their governor's rationale. You didn't do what I told you, so I'm going to punish you. I mean, this is really, just to boil it down into pure politic, this is very Machiavellian. This is exactly, if you've ever read The Prince, this is exactly what Machiavelli laid out. This is what you do. You gut your enemy in public. This isn't going to do them any good long term, but this was a symbol. This was a sign saying you screw with me. We're going to take you out and we're going to gut you in public. Now it's going to be interesting to see where this turns. There were tens of thousands of people out in the streets there in Lansing, Michigan. One of the folks there was my next guest, Susan Ryan, recording secretary with AFSCME Local 207 there in Detroit. Susan, thanks for taking time for me.
Hey, how you doing, Rick? It's good to be on tonight.
You know, I look at what your governor said. He said purely, it's payback. You know, you didn't do what I told you to do, so I'm going to pay you back with this.
Well, we've got to focus on organizing in the workplace and in the streets. I mean, right now what they're doing is just gangsterism. I mean, they're not following the rules, and they're trying to create all kind of laws to hold us back and make us to follow rules that will lead to us not having the organizing we need to win. And we've just got to get back in the streets. We've got to look at our options, talk about striking. We've got to deal with our employers, and we've got to build our unions.
Do you buy the argument that your governor says that he's pro-union and that this is meant to help the unions? Do you buy any of that?
I don't think anybody buys that, Rick.
Well, I don't, but I mean, that's the line that he keeps selling. I mean, but here's the thing, Susan. You know, I had a number of my conservative friends call me today, and they are throwing their hands up saying, yeah, we won! And none of them could explain to me what exactly they won. You know, they won the prize,
true.
They just don't know what it is that they got. And I keep saying what angers me is what they got is, well, a nation that is spiraling downward. Wages that are falling, benefits that are falling, pensions that are going away, all because we're allowing the right wing of this country to eviscerate and destroy my right and workers' rights to organize.
Right. We've got to fight for greater equality. We've got to stand with our brothers and sisters who are fighting laws against immigrants. We've got to bring back, we won our case to get affirmative action back in Michigan. And what did the attorney general do? He put a stay on it. They're not fighting by the rules. They're just making it up as they go along and trying to stop us from organizing our side of the fight to bring greater equality. And it's just not going to be done through politicians and votes.
Yeah, and at the end of the day, this is about, as you've said, getting out in the streets and doing the hard work of talking to people and organizing. And, you know, I'm hoping that what you do there in Michigan is do what they did in Ohio and really push back hard so maybe we can stop it. Because the reason that I think it's important that I get folks like you to come on and talk about what's going on there is because the same kind of insanity could happen here at any moment.
It's happening all across the country. And it's just, they're going to do as much as they can get away with.
As much as we allow them to get away with.
That's right. And honestly, we've got to have less illusions in the politicians and the elections. We can't wait till 2014 in Michigan. That's simply letting them consolidate what they've done over the course of this election cycle. We've got to come back to our workplaces, unify with our coworkers, and begin to fight for greater equality in every way we can.
Yeah. So, in looking at this, I've seen some reports that there may be a possibility of putting this on the ballot for referendum. I've heard a couple of other ideas. Is there any discussion of how maybe you use the courts or the ballot box to overturn this?
Well, Rick, you're talking to the wrong person, because I'll tell you right now, I think that those kinds of strategies have caused us nothing but trouble. We've got to be having an attitude of getting back in the streets and organizing. We've got to talk about striking. We had three school districts shut down yesterday, and it should have been every workplace in Michigan. And that's what we need. And the teachers had it right. The ones that Warren schools were closed down, Taylor schools were closed down. That's the way to do it.
And it's something that's going to have to catch not just in one area but across the country.
Well, you've got to start wherever you can. If you and your coworkers are willing to stand up and do something, you ought to do what you can, because that's how a movement is built. You know, when Rosa Parks broke the law and sat down on that bus, it was illegal. And she was alone. She had an organization of people, but it really takes leadership. It takes stepping out there front, and there's just no safe way to fight if you're a union person these days.
Yeah,
it's not easy.
Yeah, as you pointed out, she did have the Highlander School behind her, and they were one of the folks who were really pushing to help folks like her. But you're right. She was out on her own.
Well, we say that now, 50 years later, we can talk about all the support. But at the time, I'm sure it didn't feel that way.
Yeah. You know, and again, you know, I go back to what I said earlier in the program. You know, the way that your governor laid it out and the way the right has spun what unions are is it's just like, you know, like an insurance. It's like Aflac or a product, a consumer product that you would buy. And they kept using the word value proposition, which you know, kind of that caught my attention. But mm-hmm. I see it much differently. I see being a member of a labor union as being part of a movement that is pushing the country forward for positive change, for opportunity for folks, not as some product I can buy on a shelf.
That's right. And it's you have to unify with your coworkers these days. We just took a 10% pay cut at work. They're telling us that they're going to continue to do job cuts. We've held them off now because of our strike and because the organizing is done in the community. So we're not seeing the layoffs this year, but who knows next year what's going to happen, especially with this emergency financial manager law that just passed. They want the right to obliterate contracts. They want the right to deal with financial problems that they've created by not charging people, raising enough revenue through taxes. They want to put that problems on working people's backs. And what we're seeing is them finding ways to give businesses a break, to give people who earn a lot of money a break on taxes, but then turn around and get rid of people who clean buildings or cut the grass or who do the work that actually makes, like, our water department run. This is not how the future of either we're going to see unions grow, people are going to have to decide if they want to be part of growing our unions and organizing for greater equality, or if they're going to watch everything that unions have earned over the last 100 years disappear.
And be eviscerated and stolen from us. Because I think you've laid out the perfect scenario of redistribution of wealth, taking it from the people who actually work for a living and handing it to those who, well don't.
Well, that's how it works unless you are organized in unions. And so many workers now in the United States don't have the power of organized labor on their side. And, you know, what I would say to the people that listen to your show, a lot of them who are probably not a union member, is we've got to organize every workplace in this country. And we've got to learn to use our own organizing, our own labor, to be able to say, hey, enough is enough. We need public services. It's not enough just to make the rent. You really want to have a good life for your family.
You want good
public schools, good public services. You want less crime. You want opportunity for your kids. And we're not going to get it with these guys being in charge. They're going to do everything they can to cut your wages and to get rid of public services.
Well, I mean, you go back to the textile strikes in Lawrence, Massachusetts, back at the turn of the 19th century, where, you know, they say the bread and roses strike. Bread, yes, but roses too. Yeah, I want to be able to eat, but I also want some of the other things as well.
Well, at work today, we were talking about the guys that, you know, the men and women who are stuck working on Thanksgiving and Christmas, and the people who are in the job and just wanted to be treated decently. That's what unions are about. It's about feeling like you're going to work and you don't have to be on your knees to somebody every day. Unions are about when you see your coworker being treated badly, you step up and you take their side. That's what unions are about. And it's really up to the people who are working now in the workplace to decide, do they want to unite together or they, you know, what is their aspiration? Is it their aspiration just to make enough, or is it that you want to have a decent life where you do the right thing and you stick by the people that are in your life that you work with every day? And, you know, that's Reaganism taught a lot of kids that it's better to have a fantasy that you might be rich someday than to actually admit, hey, you know what, I'm a working stiff and I'm going to stick with the union.
That's an excellent point, Susan. You know, but the thing that gets me is, you know, I've done some of that organizing, that, and you talk to people and you laid it out. You know, people are saying, well, I don't really care. I'm going to be gone from here in 6 months, a year. I really don't care. And I say, well, you know, fine. Leaving, you're moving on to bigger and better things. Why not make your conditions right now better for the next guy coming through? Why not leave something positive behind? And I guess, you know, for 30 years we've been told that we're individuals, we can make our own deals. And I guess we have, for the most part, really bad deals.
Well, you know, I mean, the union is this tool that we have it's the best tool that we could have to deal with the problems that we have right now. We've got a lot of people out there that are trying to cut public services, to take away what they call entitlements, which are just, it's stuff for working class and poor people to have something better than just their bread and butter. And unions are great tools. They are the organizing power of working people. And we need to use that tool and organize ourselves and defend ourselves, because that's really what it's all about. You make the best out of the time that you live in. And let me tell you, this time where we're living right now, it's hard, but every time is hard for working people. And you just have to do the best that you can and do the right thing to the best of your ability.
Absolutely.
And I'm just really glad that I have a union. And even if I didn't, I would make a union. And that's my advice to anybody out there who wants more than they have today.
Outstanding. Susan, I always appreciate the time. I always enjoy talking with you. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Rick, and hello to all your listeners.
Thank you. Susan Ryan, Recording Secretary of AFSCME, Local 207 out there in Detroit. Always enjoy talking to her. Quick break. Back with your thoughts. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425.
America better. The Rick Smith Show.
AFSCME, Council 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? AFSCME Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561.
Ganley Law is a proud sponsor of the Rick Smith Show. To better serve you, Ganley Law has 9 offices throughout Pennsylvania. Call our main office in Waynesboro. If we think we can help you, we'll schedule a time and place that is convenient for you for a confidential initial consultation at no charge. At Ganley Law, you pay no retainer and no attorney fees unless we are successful in bringing your claim. Our experienced attorneys, Charles Ganley and Deborah Packer, will fight for your rights. If you face a work-related injury, an occupational disease such as hearing loss, work-related hepatitis or HIV, sexual harassment, or employment discrimination, call Ganley Law. That's toll-free statewide at 1-888-FIGHT-17. That's 1-888-334-4817. Ganley Law, fighting for workers' rights, fighting for your rights.
Also at GanleyLaw.com.
Are you feeling that back-to-school squeeze? Backpacks, clothes, shoes, all the things they have to have because last year's stuff is so last year? If you have a supply shortage, we can help. We know what it's like, and we've got the ultimate hall pass for you. Transfer your high interest and department store balances to PSECU. Our Visa balance transfer has a low 2.9 annual percentage rate, good through New Year's Eve of 2013. We don't charge you a transfer fee, and you can roll up to $20,000 in balances if you qualify. That's a lot of swag. Financing life is what we do best. Talk with us. Call 800-LOAN-555 or visit pseCU.com/visa for complete program details.
This credit union is federally insured by the National Credit Union Administration, Equal Opportunity Lender.
Demanding the super rich to pay their fair share for once. The Rick Smith Show.
Play this
back to the Rick Smith Show. here at the website, thericksmithshow.com. So, you know, I'm looking at, you know, this, I'm looking at this story about Bristol Palin. And evidently she had done a, you know, I guess the whole Palin family has just turned into one of these reality show, families. You know, the whole thing's just an enterprise, if you will. But evidently Lifetime had done the Bristol Palin Life's a Trip show. And it had such poor ratings, it did so poorly, they yanked it from its slot after just two episodes. And who would really want to see it anyway? Not me, but, you know, somebody, I guess there's somebody who knows. But they point out that the state of Alaska had given something like $360,000 in subsidies so that this show could be done in Alaska. And, you know, it's one of these deals where you go, weren't they going to do it anyway? Why are you subsidizing something that they were going to do anyway? Why are we giving huge amounts of money to these companies who are going to do it anyway? And as the Fairbanks Daily News Miner pointed out, because they're the ones who broke this story, the production, you know, the company that did this, they spent somewhere around $990,000, in Alaska. Now look, they spent, that's the money that the total budget for the production, about half of that, probably a little more than half, went to the people, you know, doing the gig. So it didn't really go into the local economy. So about half of that $990,000 went out of the state, you know, to the talent, if you will. And then almost $360,000 of it was taxpayer dollars. So what was the company out? Well, almost nothing. I mean, if you really stop and think about it, it's close to nothing. They subsidized almost it just blows my mind. So there was no real economic activity. Nothing really happened. No long-term jobs were created. Nothing. Except more taxpayer dollars that should be going for education and social programs, you know, insurance for local low-income working people. No, taking that from there, giving it to these companies. And I guess it's what we've been lulled into. Because I think Pennsylvania has one of these film credits, just like Michigan had. When Michigan cut theirs, no more people came. And it's another example of, well, the trough that corporate America has demanded and that our politicians have created. Because everyone loves to have the, hey, we brought this production here, we brought these jobs here, or we've worsened conditions and we've screwed things up enough so that jobs came. So they can have the ribbon cutting ceremony. Instead of going, you know, how do we create a situation where if we're going to use that kind of money, there's actually a payback. Where you would have had some clawbacks, we didn't create any jobs, you're not getting any subsidy. Didn't pay off, you're not getting anything. And I look at this Bloomberg piece, you know, on minimum wage workers. 1 million hours. To make what the CEO makes. 1 million hours. And you've got the CEO of JP Morgan Chase, Jamie Dimon. Who, and you gotta love it, yeah, who's all ticked off at the idea that they actually want to hold the banksters on Wall Street accountable. But he said, you know, he said, look, I don't like the fact that we have increased inequality in the United States. Don't like it at all. No. But he said, you better be very careful. Better be very careful. If you say we're having, because I pay this person properly, and I'm going properally, almost $9 million, that's properly what it would take a minimum wage worker 1 million hours to, and somehow you believe that's proper compensation for the folks at the very top? While you're pushing down the very bottom? Okay. Just so we're clear, he goes on to say we need to have a conversation about what makes it equitable. He said you can go down the way that Cuba tried, and then, well, no one will have anything. And I love that mentality. If we have a say on what the top gets by having rational tax codes, somehow we're going to be Cuba. And look, the reality is, and you look at, you know, the studies are there. The Economic Policy Institute had a study that just came out with. They said, look, executives and workers in finance in the Jamie Dimon world accounted for 58%. 58% of the expansion of income for the top 1%. And 67% of the increase in income for the top 0.1% from 79 to 2005. So the wealthier at the top are getting wealthier, and it's the Jamie Dimons. It's the guy who was the head of Citigroup, Vikram Pandit, who they fired and got millions of dollars to go away. And you bring all this back. How did all of this insanity happen? How did we get here? Well, it's conservatism. It's supply-side voodoo Reaganomics. It's the religion of tax cuts. It's the fetish of tax cuts. It's this deregulation mentality that, oh, well, you know, we can't possibly regulate Wall Street because, well, those derivatives, they're just such complicated financial tools that regulators couldn't possibly understand. So we didn't regulate. We didn't oversee. There was nobody paying attention, and it damn near collapsed our economy because we couldn't get a cop on the beat. So if I say we should be raising the minimum wage because low-wage workers are being screwed, that's class warfare. If I say that the CEOs who are making millions and tens of millions and have no accountability or no merit whatsoever to what they get, if I say we should be taking a look at that, somehow that's communism. That's socialism, Rick. We should be able to steal as much as we can. And I go back and I think of my conversation this morning with my Tea Party hygienist and my Tea Party dentist. This idea that, well, I earned it. It's mine. I shouldn't care about anyone but me. That mentality is what is really destroying this country. You know, you go back to the Eisenhower years. And a friend of mine, you know, said his father during World War II, he lived in the UK. During World War II, the top marginal tax rate in the UK was, in Britain, was 95%. And he said, this guy said his father was proud of the fact that he could pay that 95%. It was patriotic because the country needed it. The country was in trouble and in dire straits and needed it. And he was proud of the fact that he was in that bracket and he could pay that. And I think about the 47% that Romney said he didn't care about. You know, every one of them would be proud to pay federal tax if they made enough money. I scratch my head and I wonder what it's going to take when we stop looking at the folks at the bottom with a jaundiced eye and start looking to the folks at the very top. We start looking at the CEO of McDonald's who's making $8.75 million a year when minimum wage workers would have to work a million hours to make what takes in just 1 year. It's mind-blowing. Yet it's class warfare, Rick. Blows my mind. If you missed any portion of the program, you can download the podcast there at therickSmithShow.com. Get the Stitcher app on your smartphone. We're going to take a quick break back with Hour 3 after this. Stick around.
Exposing that free trade is never free. The Rick Smith Show.
You are listening to The Rick Smith Show on WIOO 97.9 Carlisle and 93.9 Shippensburg. We're back live in the studio tonight and every weeknight from 9 to midnight. Got something on your mind? Give us a call, 1-888-520-RICK. That's 1-888-520-7425.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham.
Shame on you! Shame on you! Shame on you! Angry protesting Michigan workers confronting police on Tuesday at Michigan State Capitol. Thousands of people gathered at Michigan State Capitol to protest final passage of the anti-union legislation known as Right to Work. Police pepper sprayed at least one person, and at least two pro-union protesters were arrested. About 12,000 people turned out to protest the attack on unions. The anti-union Tea Party group Americans for Prosperity erected a tent on the Capitol lawn, but it was torn down by protesters. This is what it sounded like as that tent came down. The so-called Right to Work law will be signed by Michigan Governor Rick Snyder very soon as the Republican-controlled government in Michigan rushes it through the lame duck session. This is the latest Republican Party attack on the organized power and rights of working people. Unions in Michigan, including the United Auto Workers, are vowing a protracted and powerful fight back against the politicians responsible for this anti-union attack.
Right to work!
In more than 100 events coast-to-coast this week, working families called on their congressional representatives to reject cuts for Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid, and to stop tax giveaways to the rich. The AFL-CIO says in a variety of ways, people sent the message to Congress to make the people's will crystal clear. From candlelight vigils to caroling to petition signatures and rallies, politicians were told to keep their hands off earned benefit programs that are vital to working people. Poll after poll demonstrates strong majorities of Americans want no cuts to Social Security and Medicare, while they do want the rich to be taxed more. Polls also show people blame Republicans more than Democrats or President Obama for the so-called fiscal cliff standoff. A Connecticut conference about attacks on civil liberties in the U.S. is leading to formation of a civil liberties solidarity network. Melinda Tuhus reports.
The conference theme was, "An injury to one is an injury to all," which harkened back to a 19th century labor slogan. John Woodruff, Jr., the Northeast International Rep for the United Electrical Workers Union, spoke on the morning panel that also featured representatives of an immigrants' rights group, Muslim Americans, a prison abolition group, and the American Civil Liberties Union.
The broader history of the labor movement, labor history in this country, has gone hand in hand with violent attacks on our civil liberties from our founding. Our union, the UE, was one of the first national unions to come out and say that you have rights, not only in this country, but in the union.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
I am 60 years old. I was born in 1951. I went through the civil rights era, and I'm telling you, I'm still here. And if I can stand, you can stand and keep standing.
Well, you know, that's what it's going to take. We're going to have to stand up, fight back, and get out into the streets. And like she said, you know, 62 years old, she can stand. We can all stand and fight back. And you look at what's going on in Michigan and the attacks on working people across this country. More than ever, we need to be out in the streets and we need to be fighting. And I look at Germany, for instance, where they have strong union density. They've got strong union participation. And oh, by the way, they've got something else because they have that power on the shop floor. They have that power among the collective workers. They can also demand by law, because they got it put through, that a worker actually sits on the board. So when the corporate decisions are made, when the higher-ups make the decisions. There are actually workers that sit on those boards and have input into what happens on the shop floor. Imagine that. Gee, if that were to happen, do you think we'd have all the ugliness that's going on right now? I doubt it. Which is why I've asked Nila Arargo, a 34-year-old Hyatt hotel worker, to come and talk to us about what's going on. You know, they're running this campaign. HyattHurts.org is the website. Nila, thanks for taking time for me.
I am Neil Arago, and I work in Hyatt Regency for 34 years.
I appreciate you taking time for me. You know, and in that 34 years, you know, what kind of things have gone on? What do you do? Are you a housekeeper?
I do work in housekeeping department, yes.
And, you know, over that time, have you seen the workload get greater? What's been your experience in your 34 years there at Hyatt?
Okay, in my hotel that I've been working with, because, you know, we belong to the union, we have 14 rooms for 8 hours work, but the bed is so heavy, it's 150 pounds.
Right.
So it's so hard for room cleaners or room attendants to finish 14 rooms a day, because you have to fit, you have to work fast and everything.
So have you had any input on what goes on? Because I know one of the campaigns that they're working on, that Unite's working on, is to try and get a worker to actually sit on the Hyatt board so that, you know, there's some input in what goes on. Someone like you sitting on the board of directors, there would be a different conversation, I would imagine, at that board table, wouldn't there be?
It would be nice, yes, because, you see, as a worker for 34 years, I have so much experience to tell the board of directors that if we can sit down, if we can let us sit in one of the board of directors in their meetings, that we can discuss what's going on in our department, and mostly in all hotels in the United States and abroad.
Do you find that the company that you work for, that Hyatt, do you find that they listen to your concerns, or do you believe that they care about their employees or their thoughts or any of that?
I don't think so, because, you see, our general manager, if they care about us, you know, they will give us the necessary things that we needed, especially now that they're trying to hire the temporary workers.
So they're trying to undercut you.
To work as a room attendant or whatever works in the department. So they don't want them to have good benefits like, you know, we have right now. Some people who work in different hotels in Hyatt Corporation, they work 30 rooms a day. They have to finish all these 30 works a day.
How many? Did you say 30?
30, yes. Some of the Hyatt in Indianapolis, in Baltimore, and also in Texas, Houston, Texas, they're doing that. And if you cannot do their job, they send you home and, you know, they will get you fired.
How, 30 rooms? I have no idea how you would clean 30 rooms in 8 hours.
No, in my hotel, we just clean 14 rooms because we are unionized.
Okay, so the difference is you're the hotel you work at is unionized and those are not?
Those Hyatt workers that doesn't have the union, they have been abused cleaning rooms, 30 rooms a day. That's why too many injuries that has happened to the workers. They're trying to do that in our hotel too, you know. They're trying to put the iPad that the room cleaners will bring wherever you're going to work. That's why they're, you know, going to do that, so that they will know where you are.
Yeah, I mean, you want to talk about surveillance right there. As I understand it, correct me if I'm wrong, they give you like an iPhone or an iPad that you have to carry with you, and every couple of minutes it's asking you what you're doing, telling you what to do, and making you log in and say what you're doing. It's like constant monitoring.
Correct. That's why in different Hyatts, they do have it, like in Chicago. But in our hotel here, because we have been fighting so hard not to do what they're doing from different hotels in Hyatt Corporation, we're fighting hard for that, not to carry all the iPhone and the iPads. But I think they're trying to do that.
So how do we help get someone someone like you, for instance, with your 34 years of experience working in the hotel, how do we get someone like you on the board of directors? How do we get somebody who's actually done some of the works, knows what it means to actually put in an honest day's work? How do we put those folks on the board of directors?
It would be nice, see, because we are the one experienced in the hotel work, how to work in the hotel. We are the one who faced with the guests. If there's a problem with the guest, we are the ones who empower ourselves to help the guest, what, you know, what they needed.
So,
and it would be nice also that we can tell the board of directors how hard Hyatt to give the respect to their employees.
So we're one, I guess we're boycotting Hyatt at this point, the non-union hotels. We're boycotting the non-union hotels there?
Some of the, okay, I think it's the thing the way I understand is some hotels, some Hyatt hotels have been boycotted. Like, for example, our Hyatt in Hyatt Regency San Francisco, Grand Hyatt, and Santa Clara Hyatt, some of them in LA, but not all Hyatt has been boycotted because they gave what the workers want.
Right. But there's also a global boycott going on in places like London and places like,
yes,
India,
correct.
And things like that.
Yes, correct.
Because, you know, at the end of this, you know, Hyatt is a global corporation. And the fact that there are no working people on that board tells me that they probably don't know don't care what it takes to do your job or how difficult it is.
Yeah, the thing with Hyatt, they just want to have their profits. They don't tell the board of directors that we are the one who are giving them billions of dollars because our life, we give it to them.
So let me ask you now, how do I help? How do our listeners help? How do we get it to where there's at least one working person who sits on that board? How do we get them to force Hyatt to do the right thing?
Okay, I think the only thing that I can think now is if you guys can help us and spread the word, especially you guys, you work in the radio station, to help us to be part of one, especially there are 12 directors in the right board of directors that right. will hire one employee to tell what's going on inside the hotel and let those board of directors know, because I know that they don't know what's going on because they are just listening what's telling them about the profits and everything.
Right. And we can send people to HyattHertz.org. We've got a link at TheRickSmithShow.com. Just click on Neela's name. It'll take you right there. And there's some information there that you can take a look at. Because, you know, to me, this is one of those places where, you know, if we could get one person on the board at Hyatt, maybe we could start looking at getting someone other than Mitt Romney on the board at Marriott, and maybe we can start getting folks on boards across this country to change how corporations are governed and the conditions that they impose on workers. Maybe it's just a start. What do you think, Neela?
It's very beautiful. We are going to be very thankful if, you know, we can be one of the employees will be board of directors.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. Neela Arargo, I appreciate the time. Keep up the fight. Thank you so much.
Thank you so very much.
All right,
have a nice day.
You
Merry
too.
Christmas.
Merry Bye-bye. Christmas to you too as well. Again, HyattHertz.org, the website, if you want more information. You can get to there from TheRickSmithShow.com. Just click on Neela Arargo's name. Quick break, right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Provoking, intelligent conversation with a heart. The voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
Is that old washer or dryer on the fritz and you don't have the bucks for a new one?
Call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
You say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well.
Call Mike at Klein's, 243-3211.
How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave?
Again, save the cost of a new one. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Here at the radio station, we call Mike our resident mechanical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything?
That's Mike.
Call him at 243-3211.
You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might give you another 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too.
So call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Let Mike fix it right, and you pocket the savings.
That's 243-3211 for Mike at Klein's Appliances Repair Service.
One pretty good rule in making public policy proposals is this. If you're going to cite a source in support of your plan, first, confirm that your source actually does support your plan. Republican budgeteer John Boehner recently put a new deficit reduction proposal on the table, asserting that it incorporated the numbers of a plan put forth earlier by budget expert Erskine Bowles, a Democrat. Aha, gloated the GOP leader to Barack Obama as he plopped down this bit of budgetary bipartisanship. Gotcha. Not quite. Bowles promptly retorted that his numbers were not really a plan, but were simply back-of-the-envelope ideas, adding that the numbers are no longer correct. And that pretty well sums up the slapdash package that Boehner called credible. For example, he says it saves $600 billion by raising the eligibility age for Medicare to 67. That'd be no problem for Congress critters who do no heavy lifting and already get full medical benefits from taxpayers. But it's not a credible idea for millions of working-class folks who actually do heavy lifting and are not able to work an extra 2 years. Another incredible piece of Boehner's handiwork is the claim that it'll save $800 billion by eliminating unspecified tax deductions. However, the only way to reach that number is by severely whacking the deductions that people get for donations to churches, hospitals, universities, and other charities. Do Republicans really intend to do that? Or did they just not have a calculator on hand when they put this mishmash together? This is Jim Hightower saying Boehner keeps failing the bogusity test because his numbers are, well, bogus. And he's using bad numbers just to prevent pampered rich people from paying a little bit more into our nation's public treasury. That's not only deceitful, it's seriously shameful.
To get more of Jim Hightower's populist take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to, visit www.hightowerlowdown.org.
When you wake up in the morning, do you care about the price of gold?
Well, I pay attention to the price of gold, but I think it reflects a lot of things. It reflects global uncertainties. I think the reason people hold gold is as a protection against what we call tail risk, really, really bad outcomes. And to the extent that the last few years have made people more worried about the potential of a major crisis, then they have gold as a protection.
Do you think gold is money?
No.
It's not money.
Even if it's been money
for 6,000 years, somebody reversed that and eliminated that economic law.
Yes, that economic law. Yeah. We got to go back to the gold standard. I hear a lot of people telling me that. We got to go back to the gold standard. I thought about this the other day. You know, with Christmas coming up, and, you know, for those of us that are Christians, we think about, the nativity and all of that and the birth of Christ. And, you know, I was thinking about going back to the gold standard, but what about frankincense and myrrh? I think they've really been screwed in this whole Christmas thing. We want to go, what about the frankincense standard? What about the myrrh standard? Gold. I think frankincense and myrrh got screwed. Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, thericksmithshow.com. So I got to be honest, with the governor's, what our governor's been doing here recently, I'm looking forward to 2014, and I'm sure there are a lot of Republicans even that are looking to oust him as well. A lot of names being thrown around. One of the names that I think the front runner is going to be is State Treasurer Rob McCord, who just won a statewide election fairly soundly, by the way. But the AP had a story today that, and I'm thrilled to see this. Finally, somebody with stones going to say, nah, not going to happen. Evidently, McCord said that he is going to withhold payments from a private lottery operator unless he's satisfied its plans to expand the lottery gaming are specifically authorized by state law. This is what we need. People are going to stand up and say, not going to do it. Not going to allow you to hack off an asset before we know that it's perfectly legal for you to do. You took the one bid the one bid to allow this company to manage one of the nation's largest lotteries, and with almost nothing as guarantees. Now, if you read the Corbett piece, they said, "Oh, well, you know, we're going to have some guarantees. They're going to put up some money, and it'll flatten out." Nonsense. You know what we know? What we know for fact? We know that the taxpayers, we're going to be guaranteeing the operating expenses of this company, Camelot. We're going to be doing that. And we know that the only bidder lowballed their performance targets. We know that. We also know that what's going on in Illinois, where they said, "Oh, we'll make up the difference," and then they didn't meet the projected targets. Now they're suing this. They're taking the state to court. This is going to be the same scenario, because from what I'm reading and what I've been told, the proposal doesn't require this privatized lottery management company to pay the seniors the full difference between the actual results and their projections. And understand, their projections have been one of these deals where, "Oh, well, we'll give you a couple up front so it makes it look sweet, but over the long haul, the growth stops." I think they're guaranteeing 1% the last half of the first 20 years, and then there's an optional rider. If you do well the first 20 years, you can decide to keep it for another 10 years, so up to 30 years, without any legislative activity, without any public hearings, without you or me or anybody else having any say whatsoever. And I look at this and I compare it to what went on in Michigan. Another theft. And right before our very eyes, they're getting away with it. What happened to transparency? What happened to accountability? And, you know, again, I look at this and you go, show me one of these privatization schemes. Show me where we have taken an asset that has been ours, we the peoples, privatized it, and it actually worked out in our benefit. I mean, we're seeing in Illinois, privatizing the lottery there didn't work. You look across the country where they've decided, "Oh, we're going to privatize our turnpikes." Not working. I've yet to have anyone call me and say, "Rick, you know, I know something we privatized that actually did well, that actually did better for us." I haven't been able to find it. Have you? And mark my words, when we allow, and it's coming, understand, it's coming, when we allow the post office to go down and we end up privatizing that, we're again going to get ripped off. And I look at the Wall Street Journal, I think it was the Wall Street Journal piece today, that the story, and I'm going to read it directly from Margaret Cronin Fisk, who wrote it, said FedEx Corporation has been systematically overcharging customers by billing businesses and government offices at higher residential rates. A company sales executive said in an internal email unsealed in a lawsuit. The emails were unsealed as part of this class action lawsuit that claims FedEx and their other companies have overcharged, you know, businesses and government as much as $3 per package on millions and millions of packages that they delivered. The claim, and now what they're doing is they're claiming that what the plaintiffs are claiming is that this is a violation of federal civil racketeering laws. And they're seeking damages three times the amount of what they're claiming to get cheated out of. And I go back and I look at this and I go, you know, the Republicans are doing everything they can possibly do and have poison pilled the post office with their 2006 law that says, "Oh, well, you know what? The post office has to do what no other corporation in the history of civilization has ever had to do, which is pre-fund their pension 75 years into the future." and they got to pay it up front now. No other corporations, FedEx doesn't have to do it. But once we've finished killing that off, you know that the cost of a stamp, that, what, 45, 48 cents I think it is now? What do you think it's going to cost when they have the ability to really stick it to us because there's no alternative? What do you think's going to happen? Well, we're going to get cheated again. And you know who knows what's going to go on with this FedEx suit? They'll probably settle something out of court down the road with a whole bunch of hush hush and gag gag, and nobody will really know what happened or if they did it or if they didn't. And I don't know at this point. But we're not going to find out. Maybe we will. You know, in the next 5, 10, 15, 20 years. But for me, I look at what we're doing. This whole push to selling off what we do for ourselves for a profit. And, you know, this story that they put out, you know, says, you know, they knew about this for years. I think it was Bloomberg, actually, who did the FedEx story. It wasn't the Wall Street Journal. It was Bloomberg who points out that, you know, these emails came August of 2011, where the guy said, you know, for years I've been trying to get somebody to do something. And, well, nothing. And I look at this and I go, you know, when we privatize this stuff, and I'm amazed that they were able to get the emails. It takes class action lawsuits, I guess, nowadays to get this information. Whereas if it were the post office, well, that's Freedom of Information Act. That's a lot easier than this lift. But as we privatize, and as we shut we to the people out of the process, how much more of this stuff happens? Yeah, you know, I had a friend of mine said, well, we don't need the post office. We've got FedEx. I go, have you ever sent a letter to FedEx? Because I have. I've sent, and it's overnight. I think it was like 18 bucks. Is that what we want to do to send mail across the country? And what we're doing by allowing the poison pill that the Republicans put in there to work, it's magic, is we're hastening the demise of the post office. You know, because we've bought into, well, you know, emails killed them. Yeah, a little bit. It's brought their volume down. But they've also got the ability to go into other products if we allow them. And once we finish them off, and it's coming, the Republicans are perfectly happy to let it go down, and our media is not focused on it. Again, you know, another month where the post office has defaulted on their pension contribution, and it's getting bigger and bigger and bigger, and they're creating this bigger and bigger monster. To where all of the ugliness and all of the cuts and the job losses and the plant and the servicing center closings are going to have to happen. And then you're going to slow down delivery times, and it's going to take, instead of 3 days, it's going to take 4 or 5 or 6. And, well, slowly you're destroying its ability to compete and forcing people to the privatized. To the FedExes and the UPSs, and look, I'm a fan of UPS, unionized workforce, workers who make a decent wage, a family sustaining wage. I mean, if you really look at that's an interesting situation right there. The difference between UPS and FedEx. And I try never to use anything. I try never to ship anything with FedEx. There are some times where people ship me things, and you know, then I'm stuck with it. But for the most part, you know. If somebody's going to ship me something, I say, you got to ship it UPS or I don't want it. Because, look, you got one company who's paying their employees a decent wage, health care, pensions, good living wage, decent conditions. And then the other that, well, they're run on an independent contractor model. They're run on a, hey, how can we cheat people out of workers' comp and out of unemployment and out of all those other things? And push that responsibility and that down onto the workforce. And you look at this and you go, there's the two scenarios. Which would you rather have? where all of the risk is on the backs of those who are least able to afford it, or a workforce that's well paid and well compensated and fairly secure. I mean, because these are the choices that we're going to have as we allow the right to destroy labor and destroy what we the people own and control, and as we shift the ability of us to dictate what happens to corporations who are not accountable to us, what is that going to leave us? Well, I say it's going to leave us in that exact scenario. It's going to leave us in the, do we want to be the UPS or do we want to be the FedEx? Do we want to have the good family-sustaining wages or do we want to have, well, you're on your own, brother, and whatever you get, you get. And, well, you know, it doesn't work out, tough noogies. It's up to us, I think. And I look at what happened in Michigan. We can allow it to happen in Ohio or Pennsylvania? I sure hope not. Sure hope not. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, and talk to Bob Nave from Talk Radio News Service. Quick break, right back after this.
Riders on the storm, into this house we're born.
Values are more than slogans. The Rick Smith Show.
Is that a washer or dryer on the fritz and you don't have the bucks for a new one?
Call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
You say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well.
Call Mike at Klein's, 243-3211.
How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave?
Again, save the cost of a new one. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Here at the radio station, we call Mike our resident mechanical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything? That's Mike.
Call him at 243-3211.
You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might give you another 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too.
So call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Let Mike fix it right, and you pocket the savings.
That's 243-3211 for Mike at Klein's Appliances Repair Service.
Earth, sky.
On a dark night, where you can see the band of the Milky Way arching overhead, look closely. There are pockets between the stars where the light seems to be missing.
But this seemingly empty space between the stars isn't really empty. It is much emptier than anything here on Earth. But nearly one-sixth of the mass of our home galaxy, the Milky Way, lives in the space between the stars. The stuff between stars is called interstellar medium. It contains ingredients for making new planets, asteroids, and stars.
The space between stars, the interstellar medium, is 99% gas. About three-quarters of that gas is hydrogen, the thermonuclear fuel that powers our sun and all stars for most of their lives.
The other 1% of the space between stars is interstellar dust. This dust in space consists of grains of ice, carbon compounds, and silicate. The interstellar medium is shaped by stellar winds, dying stars, the magnetic fields of galaxies, and vast supernova explosions.
All that matter and activity, and yet most of the stuff between stars, is invisible to our eyes. Modern astronomers explore the interstellar medium using special kinds of telescopes, sensitive to radiation in the radio, infrared, and X-ray parts of the spectrum. Come to EarthSky.org and search for the words interstellar medium to learn more. EarthSky is a clear voice for science.
We're at EarthSky.org.
The most important issues of the day. This is the Rick Smith Show.
Yes, the most important issues of the day, the breaking news. Yes, it's 12-12-12. 9 days to the end of the world. And just in time for this couple in India who they were engaged on 10-10-10. They were registered to be legally married on 11-11-11, and today at 12-12 this afternoon, they were married at 12-12 on 12-12-12. And the question I have is, do you care? Probably not. Let's find out what's going on in Washington, D.C. I got Bob Nay, Talk Radio News Service. Bob, do you care?
About the people getting married on 12-12-12?
Yes, yes.
I care more about that than the fiscal cliff.
Excellent answer there. I mean, you know, hey, they've only got 9 more days to live because I'm told the end of the world is 9 days away.
That's the fiscal cliff end of the world. Then you've got the Mayan end of the world.
But I was told, my Tea Party dentist told me today that the whole end of the world on 12/21 is actually not going to happen because the Mayans never figured in leap year, which leap year is only, you know, 500 or 600 years old. So the end of the world was actually back in like June.
I know, I've heard that.
And
you have
missed it.
You have a Tea Party dentist.
I do. Yeah, it tells you how smart I am. We're sitting here arguing politics and arguing why he is wrong while he's jabbing me in the mouth with a metal prod.
That's hilarious.
It tells you I'm probably not the brightest bulb in the box on that front. But, you know, hey, you know, he's a good dentist, and, well, I've never had any cavities, so that's a good sign, I think. So what's going on? I mean, the fiscal mirage, I mean, the big cliff, I guess the bus, what I've been reading, the bus is mostly over. The rear wheels are just spinning. What's going on?
Yeah, well, John Boehner, Speaker of the House, came up with, you know, that he'll go now, I don't even remember the exact number, another up to $800 billion in revenue. In other words, you know, he'll try to find more revenue or agree to more revenue. And the president is going a certain, you know, he's going to go a certain amount of cuts. And then Boehner said, well, you really didn't do the cuts. And then Carney, the press secretary to Obama, said, yes, pages 14 to 47, blah, 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 we've done them. But the bottom line is that the two of them, and I say this, the two of them, because the rest of the Congress is out to lunch, the two of them can't agree on the base, not the ceiling of where they go to, but on the base of where you – the president says, well, we don't have two wars, so there were some cuts last year. We add that in, and Boehner says, no, we don't. The mainstream media has been reporting, Rick, that, you know, a deal seems to be, you know, close. I don't see it.
Yeah.
I don't see it because – It mechanically, they've got to have this thing finished by around the 15th or 16th, in my opinion anyway, just to get the thing mechanically and technically through the process.
Yeah, but even if it does go to the end of the year, I mean, there are mechanisms in place to stop the ugliness from really happening immediately. I mean, it's still the middle of January before anything really happens. And, I mean, you know, even the IRS, do they have to raise the tax rates if it expires? I mean, do they have to actually go through that immediately?
It would take, I mean, the process itself, they couldn't do it that quick. I just don't imagine how the IRS could do it that quick. So I think there's some time. I mean, if the Congress wants, this is a matter now, it's going to be a matter of guts or ego or who did what.
Right.
If they wanted to, they can just say everything. You know, they created this fiscal cliff.
Yes.
This is artificial. They can artificially say, oh, the fiscal cliff is now January 31st. Now, of course, they would be, quote, you know, chickens for doing that, but it would be more prudent than to try to paste together what on earth they're doing. And they do need the rest of the Congress to approve it.
Yeah, I mean, but, you know, at the end of the day, I mean, from a good governance standpoint, you know, this game of chicken that we're playing, and as you've so aptly pointed out, this was something that they created because they failed to do their job a couple years ago.
Correct.
Just from a good governance standpoint, the end of the world, as they've made this situation sound, is not imminent. We can, you know, we can't push this off another month, 2, 6, if we have to. It's not like there's an asteroid coming to Earth and going to kill us all as they've made this cliff sound. We can smartly do things, right?
Yes, because this has been going on for a while anyway, for years. And, you know, but it's D.C., and the phrase I love to quote all the time is, you know, let no good emergency go to waste. And this is kind of maybe the easy way out that, well, we've got to do this and we had to do that. But at the end of the day, the easy way out on this thing, I think, is going to be the non-proper, the non-prudent way out. They should take some time with this. This is pretty serious. These are serious things.
Yeah.
They created this. They created this cliff.
Yeah, I mean, and if all the ugliness that comes from what they did happens, I mean, then the blame game really begins. And I have to be honest, I mean, you look at where the Republicans have dug in. They have dug in on defending 2% of the population.
They're getting, you know, cracks. And, of course, I think some of that's intentional cracks. I believe some of these people, and this is the theory on the Hill, some of these people are going out with the blessings of the Speaker to say, you know, John McCain, you know, and others, well, not with the blessing of the Speaker, but the House members, have gone out to say, yes, you know, well, we can tax, you know, the rich. and that gives the speaker cover with the Tea Party people. So some of that might be...
Well, all of this stuff is political theater. Yeah. I mean, and the strings are being pulled.
You know, and it is political theater. It's a lot of dog and pony shows, we call it, and we call it on the Hill. You know, this has happened before, just different topics. Now, not to this level of a problem in a sense, but the Patriot Act is a great example where, you know, we had to do something.
Immediately.
We didn't take any more time with it. We had to do something.
Yeah, and I remember at the time going, whoa, do we have to rush this through? And you look at how bad, in my opinion, it is.
It was awful.
I mean, it's you know, where are my libertarians? Where are they losing their minds? Because, you know, that really consolidated power. If you're fearful of the government, the Patriot Act is something to be fearful of.
And they said, you know, because I know I was one of three no votes in the Republican side, only three of us. It was a very lonely board that day when it lit up. And people said, you know, how can you do that? And I said, well, how can, you know, we're not going to catch Osama bin Laden, you know, by passing this act today. We can go another month. Well, we could have went another 10 years, you know, before we caught him. But that's what happens out there.
Well, it's interesting, guys. I remember that whole, there were a number, where I lived in Allentown, there were a number of groups that held like little forums on the Patriot Act. And I remember going to the legal Women Voters had a forum. Mm-hmm. And they had, you know, a panel of six people. And admittedly, three people had read it, every page of it. You know, law professors who have a lot of time. And three people who were for it, hadn't read it at all. They read the executive summary. So the people who actually read it were dead set against it, said this is a horrible piece of legislation. People who got the executive summary were all in favor of it. And I look at it, you know, much the same way. You know, the same thing we did with, you know, handing out big money to the bankers. The same thing we do when we rush anything.
You make a good point about the fact of who will be able to actually read this monster. If they do get, if they do get a deal cut.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of this, you know, they I remember people saying, oh, they need to read the bill. Yeah, I'm a big fan of knowing what you're voting for.
Yeah, kind of common sense, I guess.
Yeah.
Which doesn't apply to Washington always.
So while we've got gridlock in Congress, while they're doing nothing, because I got to be honest, I go back to 2010, it was about jobs, right? Jobs. Nothing has come out of Congress. The Fed seems to be the only person interested in thinking about unemployment rates, thinking about at least helping the economy from not crashing. I saw today they said they're going to keep interest rates low while unemployment's above 6.5%.
Yes, for the first time, and you just got to give them credit, for the first time the Feds have went back to their original purpose of two missions, which was both unemployment and inflation. Under Greenspan, it was a little bit different scenario. This is back. It's unique what they did in a sense, but it's back to where they need to be. And they said, well, until it gets below 6.5, we're gonna toe the line and put the pedal to the metal, as they say.
Yeah, I mean, you look at this, and the Fed is supposed to be, like you said, fighting inflation and full employment. And for me, the important part for me right now, what we should be focused on full bore is full employment, especially while the rest of the world is giving us money to hold on to because they're afraid of inflation. So they're giving us almost interest-free. We could be investing that money in building roads and bridges and all the stuff that we need.
Yes, and so I think that was a really great thing that they did today, and it really will be something that will, you know, will be of help to the economy versus what's going on.
And, but, you know, the thing that bothers me is it's the Federal Reserve that's got to be doing this stuff when it should be Congress.
Yes, because people do complain about the power of the Fed Reserve, but today, the Fed Reserve is the only bright spot that really came out of Washington this week.
Yeah. Last line of questioning I've got for you. You know, I look at what happened yesterday, and I'm still fuming. There's still smoke coming out of my ears at that backdoor deal in Michigan. You know, someone who's been in government, and you're a Republican, what they did yesterday, do you see that as kosher? I mean, what they did last Thursday and how they rammed that, whether you're for right-to-work laws or you're for it or not, down the road, the way they went about it is what really bothers me.
Well, that's, you know, that's the proper way to look at it. I mean, personally, on a personal level, I've always absolutely 190% opposed right to work, period. I oppose right to work. But even if I would have supported it, you have a process there. You don't do things in the middle of the night. You don't, you know, don't decide issues like this that buried in budget bills or, you know, whichever way. I think the process is important. If you do it straight out front, yeah, people aren't going to like it. But I think that the process needs, you know, things need to have their time of this importance. I don't think Ohio follows suit. I guess, Rick, the thing that shocks me the most as a Midwesterner coming from Ohio, this used to be a Southern thing, right to work.
Yeah.
And now it's up in the Midwest. It's not a natural item for the Midwest. So I guess if they're going to get it through, they're going to get it this way.
Yeah, and that's the only way they really could. I mean, if they put it up for a vote in the state, there's no way it would pass, because I think people understand what it really means. All the flowery rhetoric and all the talk of we're freeing workers, like people like Snyder care about working people. Give me a break.
Well, Ohio had this bout years ago and learned its lesson on right to work. Even Kasich, who, you know, had some big union battles last couple of years, even Kasich came out and said, we don't need this.
He
was smart enough to do that in Ohio.
But do you think that, you know, the money, because I look at this, and this comes down to the Koch brothers and the DeVos people saying, we've got the money and we've got the leverage and we'll punish you if you don't push this. Do you think that could happen in Ohio? Because I'm going, look, you know, the argument for Indiana was we can steal jobs from Illinois. And I heard people saying from, you know, hey, we can steal Michigan, we can steal jobs from Ohio. I worry that Ohio goes, well, you know, Michigan's stealing our jobs, we can steal jobs from Pennsylvania.
I mean, you never know down the line. This is something I couldn't have predicted. This never again. The biggest surprise to me is this just didn't happen in the Midwest. This was a Southern thing. This wasn't a Midwest thing.
Yeah, it's
changed. Old dynamics and... but I think there'll be a ballot initiative, I would assume, in Michigan.
Yeah, but I don't know that it can, because, like, as you pointed out, the money point of it makes it unconstitutional to go after, because they put an appropriation in it that's in their constitution says you can't.
Well, yes, that's true.
The courts will decide it, but, you know, at the end of the day, what I spent today doing, fielding calls from my really conservative friends going, we won! And I my response back is, well, what did you win? What you want is, well, a poorer working class.
And a lot of divisions also within the same workplace.
Yeah, I mean,
that'll happen.
And to me, what bothers me is this has now become a team sport issue.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's just something that's been sweeping. Like I said, Wisconsin, originally Ohio, when Kasich took on the unions on collective bargaining. You know, yeah. Of course, that got reversed in Ohio.
Yeah, well, let's hope we see that mobilization in Michigan. It's just a damn shame. Bob, I appreciate the time. It's always great talking with you.
Nice talking to you.
Our good friend Bob Ney, Talk Radio News Service. Quick break, right back after this. Stick around.
Listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Are you feeling that back-to-school squeeze? Backpacks, clothes, shoes, all the things they have to have because last year's stuff is so last year? If you have a supply shortage, we can help. We know what it's like, and we've got the ultimate hall pass for you. Transfer your high interest and department store balances to PSECU. Our Visa balance transfer has a low 2.9 annual percentage rate. Good through New Year's Eve of 2013. We don't charge you a transfer fee, and you can roll up to $20,000 in balances if you qualify. That's a lot of swag. Financing life is what we do best. Talk with us. Call 800-LOAN-555 or visit pfecu.com/visa for complete program details.
This credit union is federally insured by the National Credit Union Administration, Equal Opportunity Lender.
Ganley Law is a proud sponsor of the Rick Smith Show. To better serve you, Ganley Law has 9 offices throughout Pennsylvania. Call our main office in Waynesboro. If we think we can help you, we'll schedule a time and place that is convenient for you for a confidential initial consultation at no charge. At Ganley Law, you pay no retainer and no attorney fees unless we are successful in bringing your claim. Our experienced attorneys, Charles Ganley and Deborah Packer, will fight for your rights. If you face a work-related injury, an occupational disease such as hearing loss, work-related hepatitis or HIV, sexual harassment, or employment discrimination, call Ganley Law. That's toll-free statewide at 1-888-FIGHT-17. That's 1-888-334-3646. 4817. Ganley Law, fighting for workers' rights, fighting for your rights.
Also at ganleylaw.com.
We took a concerted effort to go out and find women who had backgrounds that could be qualified to become members of our cabinet. I went to a number of women's groups and said, can you help us find folks? And they brought us whole binders full of women.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. And that was one of the quotes well remembered for the 2012. In fact, Fred Shapiro, associate librarian at Yale School of Law, released his seventh annual list of the most quotable quotations of the year. That was one of them. The binders full of women. In fact, number two there. The number one, of course, was Romney saying that there are 47% of the people who will vote for the president no matter what. It's not my job to worry about these people. So my job is not to worry about those people. And, you know, what he said is, look, I was inarticulate. And I don't think so. I watched the video. He was quite articulate. Rolled right off his tongue. And then there was number two, the binders full of women comment that he made there in the second presidential debate there in Hempstead, New York. And then you get into the other ones. Number three was the you didn't build it quote from Obama. If you were successful, somebody along the line gave you help, which I agree with. If you've done well, there's been a lot of help behind you. A lot of folks have done things to pave the way. He said, look, there was a great teacher somewhere in your life, someone who helped create this unbelievable American system that we have that allowed you to thrive. Somebody invested in roads and bridges. He said, if you've got a business, you didn't build that. And all we heard was, well, you didn't build that. And the right wing went to the fringe with it. And I loved the convention, the RNC convention, where someone had taken a picture of, because they had a debt clock there. And the signer said, Obama, you didn't build this. And you're right, he didn't. A lot of Republicans did that. Number four quote was President Obama, when he said during the second presidential debate there in Hempstead, New York, please proceed, Governor. Which basically said, you know, keep digging, and a little deeper, if you will. And the other quote was during one of the presidential debates, the one in Boca Raton, Florida, where, Romney was going after the, you know, we have less ships than we had back in 1917. And Obama said, well, it's true, we do. We also have less bayonets and less horses. He says, we have these things called aircraft carriers where planes land on them. And I liked that one. I thought that was a good quote. Some of the other quotes, Todd Akin, the legitimate rape quote was there, of course. Romney's campaign advisor, if you remember the Etch-a-Sketch comment, of course, that was number seven. Number eight came out of the Petraeus scandal. Socialite Jill Kelly said, called a 911 dispatcher in Tampa and said, I'm honorary consul general, so I have inviolability. Inviolability. Yeah. Which, if you look up what the word, kind of what it means, synonymous with holiness, blessedness, sacredness, purity. I have purity? Yeah. Then Psy was number nine with the open Gangnam style. And then 10, you got the fiscal cliff that came out of Bernanke's mouth. And the Saxby Chambliss was tied for 10th by saying, you know, I care more about my country than I do a 20-year-old pledge. Good for him. And Chris Christie tied for 10th as well with, I have a job to do. So those were the top 10 most quotable and most memorable quotes of the the 2012 year as reported by Fred Shapiro in his seventh annual list. But, you know, one of the, I go back to Richard Murdoch, who did not make the list, thought Richard Murdoch should have, you know, got, he had the job, man. He had that Senate seat won. He had it won. Absolutely. He knocked off, Lugie, had the Senate seat there in Indiana and just snatched defeat out of the jaws of victory when he said, and you, exactly, you know, this is why he lost the female vote there in Indiana. He said, I struggled myself for a long time, but I came to realize life is a gift from God. Even when it begins in that horrible situation of rape. It's something that God intended to happen. And you go, really? God intended people to get raped? Is that the... Yeah, you wonder why he lost. But in a sign of pure petulance, I look at Alan West as my loser of the sore loser of the week. He was being interviewed on a conservative talk program where they said, you know, you're a national treasure. You're way too important to have something like this happen, and you go off. He said, this radio host said, that can't happen. Can't happen. So I'm really curious to know, do you have any further plans for public service in mind, you know, potentially? And Alan says, well, you know, the most important thing everyone has to understand is my voice is not going to be lost. Oh, please, don't go away. He says, we've gotten a lot of opportunities and a lot of offers, and we're going to make sure we continue to have that platform. He says, I'm a warrior, and I'm a statesman, and I'm a servant of the republic. He says, I'm not going away because a congressional race where he seems to have to cheat to beat me. Yeah, that's right there with the Romney and Ryan, the sore loser. Wow, it's the Urbans that we lost. It's because they had gifts to give away. And Alan West said, well, it's because they cheated. They cheated! They cheated, Mom! Statesman? I don't know that I would consider Alan West a statesman. I'm not going there. I think the statesman thing is way, way out of line. Statesman. Interesting thought. Much like Rick Snyder and Scott Walker, they're statesmen. Yeah, they really care about all the people, right? You look at what happened in those states. And you look at this, the whole Tea Party thing. Statesmen, I wouldn't call any of those Tea Party people statesmen. I mean, you know, it's easy to stand up and pontificate and to, you know, to do what they've done, but what have they actually accomplished? I mean, you look at the crisis that they've created for the end of this year. This is a created crisis. And when you... And I had this conversation with my Tea Party dentist this morning. I said, look, it's a mirage. They created this. The asteroid isn't coming to destroy the planet. There isn't a volcano going to erupt. There's no earthquake. There's no natural disaster. As easily as they created this, they can uncreate it. By having true statesmen, by having people who say, you know what? We're not going to tank the entire country. We're not going to tank the economy just because we're petulant. Or because we're bought and paid for by the handful. You know, a true statesman would say, you know what, let's do what we can agree on to avoid the real ugliness. Let's get that done. And then we can fight and bicker and do everything over the stuff that we don't agree on. But something has to be done. Governance has to happen. But again, you go back and you look at gridlock benefits the Republicans. Gridlock and pain and misery and benefits the Republicans because they're the anti-government people. They're the people who say, see, look, government doesn't work. Granted, we're the ones who destroyed it. We're the ones who have gridlocked it. We're the ones who aren't allowing it to work, but it doesn't work. So we're the ones who are going to have to pay attention. Anyway, therickssmithshow.com, that's where you go. If you missed any portion of our program, get the podcast there. Stitcher on the smartphone. Take it with you on the go. We will see you back here tomorrow.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Together, we can make America better. Email rick@therickSmithShow.com or interact with us anytime at therickSmithShow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
It's coming like the tide and flood beneath the lunar sway. Imperial, mysterious, and amorous gray. The mother.